Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
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 This afternoon, going to discuss again topics concerning women masters or mothers. My latest book, I recently saw a letter in which it was stated that one of my male disciples had approached a GBC member saying that my guru used to speak about Krishna's pastimes, but now he just talks about women, and I don't know what I should do. But it's a strange thing, because generally I don't speak about Krishna's pastimes, nor do I speak about women, so I don't know. Sometimes I speak about Krishna's pastimes, and sometimes I speak on these social issues, but generally it's in different philosophical issues and like this. So I don't know if this is a fabrication or whatever. Anyway, a lot of devotees are talking about this nowadays, it seems, or more. By bringing out this book, it's brought this subject out into the open. It's been going on for years, many years. There is a divide in our movement on these matters. Even years ago, I remember speaking with Sahotra Swami, who's passed away. And we were just seeing that this is coming, and it came. Not just the divide, a cultural divide on all kinds of issues. And that's actually the subject matter of the book. The subject matter is not... Anyway, I'll get through. It's difficult to know where to begin, because there are so many things to say. And I've said it all before, many times, but... Anyway, here we go again. The particular reason I'm taking up this subject again is because recently I received a letter from a female disciple of mine from the Western countries. She's been a disciple for 20 years, something like this. So she's not a new devotee. She's been very strong and steady in devotional service all this time. I'll read her letter bit by bit. Actually, there's more than one letter. I don't know how much I can get through now. And then I'll reply to some of the points bit by bit, verbally. I'm doing it verbally because I'd probably just have to write the book all over again to reply to it in writing. So here goes the letter, beginning. Dear Guru Maharaj, please accept my humble obeisances. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. As you know, during your last visit here, I was dipping into your new book, Women, Masters, or Mothers. I had a lot of questions, but you quite rightly told me I needed to read the whole book. I have since read the whole book, and with all due respect, I have to let you know that I found it unbalanced and disturbing. So that's the opening of her letter. And my commentary on this is that this is a spiritual crisis. If you find something that your spiritual master not only says, but makes the subject matter of a book to be unbalanced and disturbing, it's definitely a spiritual crisis. So she's doing the right thing by bringing it to me. And she hasn't, there are two or three letters she's written. It's just between her and me so far. She doesn't want to, she's not making a campaign or sharing it with others like this. But she's sharing it with me. So I'm just quoting from a letter that I wrote in reply to her. But the main reply is going to be in this talk. And I, quite frankly, I'm doubtful if it will change her outlook on this. I'll speak about that more later. Anyway, I wrote to her, "I've always known you as a dedicated and sincere devotee, wife and mother." So she is married. She's a good devotee. She's a good wife and she's a good mother. "You have always had much respect and affection for myself, but I suspect that you have not carefully heard from myself, which is the first duty of a disciple. Had you done so, you would have not been so shocked by this book, but because within my lectures I have repeatedly discussed the points made within Women Masters and Mother or Mothers." It's whatever is written in here, it's nothing new. I've been talking about these subjects. One of the lady devotees who was protesting in Vrindavan recently, she came up to one of our devotees who was selling the book, and she said to one of our devotees, "I'm very concerned. Your guru said 150 lectures, all about women. I'm concerned. Why doesn't he talk about Krishna?" Well, these are 150 lectures. Obviously, she hadn't heard them. I know, otherwise, she wouldn't say that, because it's not just about women. It's about Varnashram and the need for it. And it's not just talking about women. And actually, in the beginning of the book, I open by saying that why should we discuss these things at all? And I say that, well, Narad Muni in the Bhagavatam discusses these things, who's famous as a brahmachari. Srila Prabhupada has discussed these things. Yeah, and it's 150 lectures, which are not just all about women at all. If you'd listen to them, you'd know. And that's out of 5,000 published lectures, or soon to be, already 2,000, I think, are on the internet. And within a few weeks, there should be 5,000. So it's a selection. And they cover all kinds of different topics connected with Krishna consciousness. So it's not that I'm day and night speaking about this, although it might seem to when you bring out a book like this. But it is an important topic. So it's one topic within many topics of Krishna consciousness, but it is vital to the direction of our movement. I'll get back to that a little later. So yeah, if you'd have heard these lectures, and then it's nothing new that I'm saying. It's those who have heard me regularly, they would know that. Of course, it can be difficult to keep up. We have so many things. We have Prabhupada's lectures to hear, and there are all several. There were about 700 now. There must be many, many to hear. But you may say, well, why listen to my lectures at all, or anyone's lectures? Why not just Prabhupada's lectures? Well, Srila Prabhupada, from the very beginning, practically from the beginning of his movement, he had his disciples preach, and that's by giving lectures and speaking, and that will go on in every generation. That's a mistake of the... I'm not saying that this lady devotee's saying that herself, but that's a common thing. Why don't we just listen to Prabhupada's lectures? Why don't we just read Prabhupada's books? But that's one reason why we have a continuing parampara, is that what the previous acharyas have taught have to be presented in each generation. And there will be disagreements. It's already going on. The most prominent disagreement over an interpretation of Srila Prabhupada's instructions on one particular and crucial issue is the Ritvik heresy. Although from the Ritvik camp, they'd say that in initiating after Prabhupada's departure from this world, even they don't like to use words, although Prabhupada himself used it in relation to his guru and other acharyas. So it requires acharyas and devotees writing and so much, analyzing what are the teachings of the previous acharyas to understand them, and there will be disagreements and divisions. So this is one which is going on. I'd like to say to that lady disciple of mine who's written this letter in protest, she's disturbed by the book, you are the only one so far who feels offended by what I wrote and took the time to explain politely your objections in detail. So others have said that they don't like it, but she has put forward her objection. So thank you for that. Now, I'm just about to have this book reprinted. And I'm going to, there, a few more things have been added in the version that's about to be printed. I'm also going to include near the beginning of this book a quote which I found in the Veda base, which is from the ISKCON Communications Journal. I'm not sure if that's still published, but it's an academic journal in which topics directly or indirectly concerning ISKCON are discussed. Scholars, professional scholars, people with PhDs working in academia, they write on topics concerning ISKCON. So in that, there was an article. The endnotes. Oh yeah, it's called The Debate About Women in the Hare Krishna Movement by Kim Knott. This is from 1995, so you can see it's nothing new, this debate. But actually there hasn't been much debate as such. Well, there's been a lot on the internet, but not any real bringing devotees together and discussing. That's done within the Catholic Church. They bring cardinals and bishops together and they discuss various issues, especially there is the Vatican Council, Vatican II. I mentioned that in the 1960s. They brought all these thinkers within the church together to discuss about how the church can function in the modern world, and they made many compromises, actually, which the immediate result of which was that many priests and bishops, monks and nuns, they left their vocation, and some of them left Christianity altogether because they said, well, we have to become more liberal and open, and you start to see the nuns walking around with short skirts and ridiculous things like, well, short means up to their knees, which, why? So I'm just quoting from the first paragraph of that essay that she wrote. The issue of women in ISKCON has been troublesome for many years, as written in 1995. So it's really nothing new. Both within its own boundaries and in the depictions of those outside it. So it's troublesome within the movement itself. And the way the movement gets seen by others from the outside. And I understand that one reason one major reason that our leaders, I'm talking about the GBC members here, have made various concessions to feminism within ISKCON, as I call it here, although I give the reason, because it definitely parallels the feministic movement outside ISKCON. So they're very afraid of what people outside might think. That's another whole discussion itself, which I didn't bring in the book, that so we're told the fastest growing religion in the world is Islam, which has clear, in almost all the ways Islam is practiced, you know. It's not that every Muslim, there are different manifestations or different branches of Islam, but pretty much all of them are quite strict on this. I mean, to the extent that women in what's considered proper practice of Islam or orthodox practice of Islam, they won't go outside the house without having their body covered. And some you still see, even in Dubai, I'm sure in Saudi Arabia, they're so much covered that even the face comes, and only the eyes are seen like that. So, then in America, the fastest growing religious sect for many years has been the Mormons, who are also not feministic at all, although there are feminists within their ranks, but basically it is very traditional in that regard. So, again, getting back to Kim Nock, for a large number of devotees, predominantly women but some men, it has been a deeply painful matter and has been perhaps second only to the issue of the status and role of the guru in threatening the future of the movement. Very heavy statement, threatening the future of the movement. And it's divisive. The matter of the role of the guru has been very divisive, to the extent that among those who call themselves follower of Prabhupada, they are clearly divided into those who accept that there should be initiating gurus after Prabhupada, and those who deny that. And it's a clear division, and both sides will say that the others are not, they're not really following Prabhupada at all. It's such a heavy point. It's something like Shia and Sunni Islam or Catholic and Protestant Christianity. It's a very strong divide. So that's one thing. And this issue of the status, the issue of women, yeah, it's also very divisive, in it, just because there are such different understandings about it, and it seems they are irreconcilable. Okay, now this article discussing that, it was prefaced by a short paragraph by the editors of that journal, which I'll now read. The debate about the position of women in ISKCON is so contentious that some would question the need to air this subject in this journal at all. Too controversial. While others would object if we did not. So even should we discuss it or not discuss it, even before we start discussing it, there's a whole discussion about whether we should discuss it or not. It's such a hot topic. It is difficult to ignore the subject, since approximately half of ISKCON's members are women, and many, if not most, come from societies where gender issues are openly discussed. I spent quite a lot of time preparing this response. It's quite a lot to say. Now, regarding the disciple of mine who wrote this letter, I think she missed or didn't fully imbibe something that was stated in the introduction. Okay, I'll read that part. This is from page 23 of the introduction. Much of what is stated herein is especially applicable to the current situation in India. In other words, devotees, both men and women in India, can understand these points more easily. And it's more applicable because it's easier for them to pick up this culture and follow it. And will be more germane and intelligible for devotees who live there, although nearly all of these points would have been obvious to the general population of past generations everywhere. It's, in other words, all over the world, these ideas were there, as is outlined in this book. It's only recently that ideas about these things have changed. It's been very heavy propaganda by feminists. The propaganda, as I mentioned, and everything I'm saying is mentioned in this book, that they made the propaganda that all the problems in... First of all, Karl Marx brought the idea that all the problems in the world are caused because the capitalists are exploiting the proletarians. And then this inequality thing came to be, men are exploiting women, so you have to make them equal. But previously, that was understood everywhere. It was accepted everywhere. Although feminists would say, yeah, but that's wrong. The whole of history is wrong. Now we got it right. It's a long and complex discussion, how this mentality came about. A lot is to do with the whole restructuring of society, beginning with the Industrial Revolution. The old roles broke down. The home was an important and active place. Men worked. If you're working in the fields, you're close to your home, and children are desired. To have many children is something desirable economically, and so many reasons. These things have been analyzed by others, not myself. It's quite complex. These points would have been obvious to the general populace of the past generations everywhere, and still will be obvious to the few remaining sane persons in these culturally challenged times. Unfortunately, it cannot be expected that everyone will accept everything in this book, especially since one of its purposes is to counteract the erroneous propaganda that Srila Prabhupada treated men and women equally in all respects. Even devotees who generally appreciate the recommendations herein might circumstantially be unable to follow them. For instance, many devotees are virtually locked into modern society. Certain women are practically obliged to go to work. Some couples are unable to beget children. And some devotees who never wanted to divorce are presented with no other choice by their recalcitrant spouse. Clearly, modern society is different from the Vedic civilization as Srila Prabhupada has described it, and to follow Vedic culture is easier said than done. And elsewhere in the book, I write about how you just can't turn on Varnashram by a switch. You just can't hit a button and say, okay, Varnashram. As we ourselves here in India in establishing our pilot rural projects meant to be developed as Varnashram, we're just starting, devotees living on the land, producing their own food and all these things. It's a great task. Srila Prabhupada said 50% of his work was not done. If he had done it, it would have been much... If Prabhupada hadn't brought Krishna consciousness to the West, we wouldn't have a clue how to do that. And Prabhupada didn't show us how to establish Varnashram. Actually, he said, I want to show that. But then Krishna took Srila Prabhupada away, so we have to do that. It's a very big task. So I think that one misunderstanding by which many women in particular, many women, I don't know how many, yeah, maybe many, are upset about this book is that they're thinking that my proposition is that immediately every woman in our movement has to change overnight. But I'm not saying that. It's a misunderstanding. It's talking about the direction of our movement, that we should know that our aim is to establish Vedic culture. There's a movement within the movement going by the name of Krishna West, which says that the general manifesto is that, well, we should just keep the spiritual processes of Krishna consciousness, but we don't need all the Indian culture. But then the Indian culture, we should understand, when we say Indian culture, of course, it's, when we say any culture, it's multifaceted. If we say British culture, it's, what do you mean by British culture? Maybe a little difficult to say exactly, but it's definitely different from Indian culture. And we're talking about attitudes, in all areas of life, and then religion or lack of it in Britain is more prominent than religion, food preferences, how people spend their time when they're not working. It's a very big topic. So British culture is different to Indian culture. Srila Prabhupada referred to the Western culture, nasty, nasty Western civilization. He wanted to bring in Varnashram, which more or less, we can say Indian culture. Prabhupada spoke of Vedic culture, sometimes he spoke of Hindu culture, sometimes he spoke of Indian culture. So when we're talking about Indian culture, we're not talking about the modern, or much of it, of what the degraded form, but the original Indian culture, some of which is still alive today. The very fact that so many Indians all over the world are taken to Krishna consciousness is because they're more culturally prepared for it. It's a culture which helps people to take to Krishna consciousness. Whereas the Western culture, nasty. Srila Prabhupada wanted to change that. So what is the general direction of our movement? Of course, chanting Hare Krishna, distributing books, these are the basic activities, but there must be some social direction also. If we're to go beyond the stage of having just a few devotees in temples chanting here and there. And Srila Prabhupada did give a specific social direction, which was his idea that the movement would cause a revolution in the world by having thousands, hundreds of thousands, millions of people living on our farms. So he proposed to re-establish the Varnashram system as far as possible, because it's not fully possible, or it's not possible to fully establish it as it was previously, but as far as possible. And for this purpose, Srila Prabhupada, he explained, he often spoke of, often wrote about his own experiences and narrations from the past. He gave verses from Shastra. Srimad Bhagavatam, again, Narad Muni, the Brahmacharis, he speaks about the roles of, even though he's transcendental to all these things, he speaks about the roles of, in In that section, Srila Prabhupada, Bhagavatam, Srila Prabhupada gives the chapter title, the Instructions for Civilized Human Beings. So elsewhere, Srila Prabhupada writes that Varnashram, unless you follow, the beginning of human civilization is Varnashram. So this is the social direction that we should be heading for. It may seem unimaginable. How are we going to do that? Apart from this issue of women having a socially subordinate role, which is very painful to many women, but we can't avoid it forever. Another thing is grading or making divisions, Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya, and Shudra, because mostly no one wants to be graded as a Shudra, but the majority population in any society is Shudra. So it's a great challenge. Who's going to, Srila Prabhupada explained all these things, that if you're a Vaishnava, you're above, you're more than a Brahmana, you're more than a Kshatriya, more than a Vaishya, more than a Shudra, but there are certain roles that we have to play in order to have a society. Just like I saw one boy this morning with his badge from his school, say, training leaders for the future or something. There's a whole thing.
Train today, lead tomorrow.
Train today, lead tomorrow. So the whole idea, you see that these educational institutions or schools, as we used to call them, they're always, we're training leaders. Who's going to be the followers if they're training? Everyone wants to be a leader. No one wants to be a follower. So, it's a difficult task. It should be done on Srila Prabhupada's order. It is if we're gonna have many devotees, we're gonna have to have communities, and we're gonna have to have some kind of social order. What do? We just go along with the Western way of life, or just somehow or other get it together, or speculate? No, we have the basis of that, which is Varnashram system, which is described in Shastra. So there's another whole chapter here, beginning on page 69. And actually, I could read the whole thing. It's so crucial, actually. At this point is... This point, I believe this is the crux of the division between those who think that, well, Srila Prabhupada treated women as equal. Actually, he didn't, but he did give them many opportunities in the Western world, to which would had never been given in the past in India. And many of our female devotees, especially, and some males also, I think, well, this should continue. That should be our model forever. But there is good evidence, but I know everyone's not going to accept it, and that's why there's a division. But anyway, there's good evidence that Srila Prabhupada, he gradually introduced the cult. He gave the teachings gradually, he gave the culture gradually. And when we talk about, Srila Prabhupada said 50% of my work means Varnashram, that means it's going to be different to the ISKCON we know today. It's not going to be, not at all. Where are we going to look to understand that? Then we have to look at Shastra, we have to look at the tradition, we have to look at what's best in that tradition. I'll get back to that a little later. But the idea that, anyway, I think I just read this whole section and maybe comment. This could go on for a long time, this lecture. Okay, I'll read this section then. Misunderstanding Srila Prabhupada's adjustments. It appears that many devotees have misunderstood some of Srila Prabhupada's early adjustments to have been the standard to be followed for all future time. For instance, his allowing women to live in temple ashrams, for which some of his godbrothers disparaged him. Why previously was that not allowed? Well, because the Vedic culture is, or any human culture, separates men and women. They don't put them close together. Another point is that women, what goes with their body is the need to produce children, which has a social and psychological function, for which ashram life is not very suitable. So on this point, Srila Prabhupada commented. This, I'm going to read part of a purport by Srila Prabhupada, which is often quoted by those who say that, or you can say the opposite party, those who say that, well, Prabhupada set it up, men and women should just all mix together, so we should continue with that. That's actually one very influential paper by Jyotirmayi Devidasi. He says that, well, in the early days of ISKCON, we all danced together in the kirtan, and then that's the way it should be. But we're all brothers and sisters. That would be nice if we were all brothers and sisters, but one reason that Srila Prabhupada gradually introduced more restrictions, although the hypothesis is that it wasn't Prabhupada, it was some nasty sannyasis who did that. Well, maybe they did it on behalf of Prabhupada, you could say, but because there is a need to separate fire and butter for spiritual advancement. Man and woman, there should be separation. So anyway, I'll read this. Sometimes, this is from Chaitanya Charitamrita, Adi Lila, chapter 7, text 32, purport. Sometimes jealous persons criticize the Krishna conscious movement because it engages equally both boys and girls in distributing love of Godhead. Engages equally both boys and girls. Not knowing that boys and girls in countries like Europe and America mix very freely, these fools and rascals criticize the boys and girls in Krishna consciousness for intermingling. But these rascals should consider that, it's a very heavy term, should consider that, it's talking about his godbrothers and others, but these rascals should consider that one cannot suddenly change a community's social customs. However, since both the boys and the girls are being trained to become preachers, those girls are not ordinary girls, but are as good as their brothers who are preaching Krishna consciousness. Therefore, to engage both boys and girls in fully transcendental activities is a policy intended to spread the Krishna conscious movement. These jealous fools who criticize the intermingling of boys and girls will simply have to be satisfied with their own foolishness because they cannot think of how to spread Krishna consciousness by adopting ways and means that are favorable for this purpose. This passage is often quoted by, that's the end of that quote. This passage is often quoted by ISKCON feminists to substantiate their claim that the adjustments made by Srila Prabhupada for his Western preaching should be perpetuated forever, thereby overriding the norms of countless generations of Vaishnava culture. So let's consider here, we've got the Vaishnava culture, which has been going on since time immemorial, Vaishnava culture within the broader Vedic culture. And Srila Prabhupada comes to the West and he's preaching among people with no idea of this culture, who are lechers and yavanas, that means me and others. And one cannot suddenly change a community's social custom. So he's giving the essence of Krishna consciousness. He doesn't say that he doesn't want to change it, that our lecher and yavana culture, that should go on forever. Unfortunately, in the West, people are so much enamored. They, and in India also, people think everything Western is so wonderful and so great. But it's a disaster. The Western society, socially, it's a disaster. Um, And even those devotees say, well, we have to do it like that. But again, they're not thinking of much of the world which is not influenced by that Western culture. And even in Africa, there, in America, the Christians who don't want to compromise with the modern way, who want to keep traditional gender roles, they're importing priests from Africa and India who are still maintaining their traditional outlook. However, there is overwhelming evidence that Srila Prabhupada wanted to replace what he called the nasty Western culture.
Yeah.
Hear the words, one cannot suddenly change a community's social customs, indicate that even though Srila Prabhupada certainly wanted to change social customs in the West, he realized the impracticality of trying to suddenly and completely change everyone. Quoting from two letters from Srila Prabhupada, in our society, the boys and girls mix, intermingle together, and this is practically impossible to stop because you Western people are accustomed to the habit. Sometimes my godbrothers criticize me for intermingling of girls and boys, but there is no way out of it. You girls and boys will mix. Even if I say not to, they cannot avoid it. They sit separately in the temple and then outside mix again. So this was not possible from the beginning. Sometimes in India, I'm criticized that I keep women and men in the same temple. In India, that is not allowed. No woman can live at night. They can come and go. But I defend myself that that is the system of the country. The women and men, they intermingle. How can I check it? Then the women, shall I not give them any chance for chanting Hare Krishna? No, I shall give this chance to women, even at the risk of illicit sex. Within traditional Indian culture, many measures for separating the sexes were more stringent than can hardly be imagined today. An example is that commonly in public events, arrangements would be made so that men and women would not even see one another. Even to the present time in Swaminarayan temples in Gujarat, they have a divide so that men are on one side and women are on the other. Elderly people in India might remember the use of a... They'd have to be pretty old now. Might remember the use of a bamboo screen for situations in which unrelated men and women would need to communicate. For instance, an Ayurvedic doctor, in those days only males were doctors, would examine a lady's pulse from behind a screen via a cotton thread tied around her wrist. He would not see the woman. Similarly, through such a screen, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati gave Harinama Diksha to one of his young female disciples. Such apparently extreme measures, nowadays we'd call that extreme, were the external manifestation of a culture wherein much precaution was taken to prevent even impure thoughts, what to speak of improper interactions. I was just talking to you this morning, Chittahari, that maybe your generation was the last in India, at least in the big cities, where boys and girls at school, even though there was co-education, but they didn't talk together, they didn't mix together. Nowadays, boys, they all have girlfriends, and the boys and girls, like this. Still, although such norms had been in practice for thousands of years, it is probably impractical to try to quickly return to them because most people today are clueless as to what constitutes proper behavior and in fact take right to be wrong and wrong to be right. So, again, I'm not saying that we have to just change everything overnight. It's understood that we have to go step by step, but we have to make some steps. It's about time we made some steps. Or at least understand that we have to pack up and get ready for the journey. We have to see this is where we have to go. Recognizing that it was difficult for his Western and especially his female disciples To accept much of Vedic culture, Srila Prabhupada did not force them to adopt traditional practices of gender separation. Yet he let them know that, quote from Prabhupada, the separation of man and woman is desirable. The very same principle he had outlined even before coming to America. This is from a purport. Srila Prabhupada writes in the first canto, the ladies of Dwarka did not mix with the crowd on the street, and thus their respectability was perfectly observed. There was no artificial equality with the man. Female respectability is preserved more elegantly by keeping the woman separate from the man. The sexes should not mix unrestrictedly. My commentary again. Srila Prabhupada was quite aware of the mindset of his Western female disciples. I'll get back to that a little later. And often encouraged them to serve Krishna in ways that were commensurate with their abilities and outlook. Doing so helped to kickstart the Krishna conscious movement in the West. Yamuna Devi Dasi recalled, as a strong and independent young woman, I met Srila Prabhupada. Strong and independent young woman. I met Srila Prabhupada in 1966 and took initiation in 1967. Had Srila Prabhupada demanded conformity to orthodox roles for women as a condition of surrender, I, along with many of my god sisters, would probably not have joined ISKCON. That he did not is a testament to his spiritual vision. He lovingly encouraged and engaged us in the service of the Sankirtan movement, and he consistently revealed himself to be Pandita Samadarshinaha, equal to all. And then I say that apart from Yamuna, many other female devotees have made outstanding contributions to Srila Prabhupada's mission. Srila Prabhupada wanted to impart Vedic tradition, but he was also practical, and therefore he wanted to impart Vedic tradition. This is an important point, which there's a divide on this. Some say, no, it's India, it's India. You know, all this Indian stuff. That's the main point of Krishna West. We don't want anything Indian. So Srila Prabhupada wanted to impart Vedic tradition, but he was also practical, and therefore he made concessions for his Western sons and daughters. In engaging female devotees in ways unprecedented in Vedic culture, he demonstrated extraordinary broad-mindedness. For example, he permitted women to perform deity worship in public temples, which is disallowed in India, and to live, albeit separately, in the same ashrams as men. He made these cultural adjustments to facilitate the establishment of Krishna consciousness in the West. I'll just skip through because we have a lot of stuff to go through. I'm just skipping ahead here. In the beginning days of ISKCON, Srila Prabhupada was very tolerant, but then he then gradually revealed to his followers how they could improve in their service and behavior. He did what every teacher must do. First start with the basics and only gradually introduce more developed concepts. That's true teaching anything. You don't start teaching children mathematics, you don't start with algebra. You have to start with 1 plus 1 equals 2. Although he had a definite outlook on Sri Dharma, I don't think anyone can deny that if you read Srila Prabhupada's books. Sri Dharma, the duties of women as described in Shastra. He did not forcibly impose it due to his observation that Westerners were simply not ready for it. And again, I'll get back to that later. Still, along with introducing pragmatic adjustments, Srila Prabhupada often spoke about Vedic culture and the necessity for establishing it, which includes traditional gender roles within the Varnashram system. While being lenient and seeing the spirit soul in everyone, he never, as some would have us believe, overrode the Vedic social teachings. And I'm just quoting from one conversation of Srila Prabhupada. Now Prabhupada said, now there should be one rule that unless they are husband and wife, man and woman should not worship deities together. Because the idea is that, well, everyone can just all mix together and serve. That was there in the early days. And then in deity worship also, men and women, but sometimes the man, there'd be a man on the altar and a woman on the altar, and not husband and wife, and they're supposed to be serving Radha and Krishna, but their attraction to each other arises. And something that I remember myself in Calcutta, two devotees, man and woman, both who are nowadays prominent in our movement. She was married to another man and he was a brahmachari, and there was some electricity between them, as the saying goes. So Prabhupada, in the beginning, they let them all mix up, but then he said, this is in 1976, Prabhupada said, now there should be one rule: unless they're husband and wife married to each other, man and woman should not worship the deities together. And actually, if that rule had been followed, then there was recently some major scandal concerning one pujari in our movement. If that had been followed, then the movement would be better off today. This idea we all mix together and then it's all, oh, we all just bliss, we all love each other and it's all Krishna conscious. But as I point out in this book, Srila Prabhupada, he spoke about establishing Varnashram even before he came to the West. But in the last few years, he emphasized it more and more. In fact, there's one famous conversation which Prabhupada talks about that, and his own disciples, Harishauri Prabhu and Satswarup Das Goswami, they argue with Prabhupada based on what Prabhupada had taught them. How are they going to say, so, well, we're transcendental? I'm a brother, if you're transcendental, then why are they falling down? So the idea that we're all transcendental and everyone can just do everything, whatever they like. No, not exactly. That's taking it a bit extreme. But we can all practice Krishna consciousness without this gender discrimination. Then problems are going to be there. And serious problems fall down from the regulated principles regarding sexual matters, that not only is disastrous for the spiritual life of those who are involved, but it's also disastrous. If you're talking about developing communities, you want to have communities of devotees living together, and if there's illicit sex, then you're going to get you're going to get one man killing another man because someone ran off with his wife, or just, oh, what can you do? And families are messed up, and then within the community, some looseness comes in and it becomes a common thing, as unfortunately it is in ISKCON today in some parts of the world. I know one of my godbrothers, he was very upset when his wife of many years just told him one day that, well, I don't want to be married to you anymore. I have no complaint against you, but I just don't want to be married to you anymore. And he tried to get the local GBC involved, and they said, yeah, just get used to it. It's just normal. They didn't want to get involved. They didn't want to say anything. So that's the way things have come. You also, now that you're moving into a community where there are families all close together, if there's any sign of anything that's not correct, check it in the beginning. Any sign, now just don't let it go. We have to be very strict, otherwise everything's going to be spoiled. Yeah. I may not be able to convince everyone in the world, but at least some. These communities that we're attempting to set up, it's a great challenge. It seems that some already want them there, hoping that they'll fail. Seems like that. It's a great challenge. This illicit sex will spoil everything, and for that we have to be very, very careful. Otherwise, people can live relatively happily. Families together, this morning so many families came to see me. It's very nice, they're all devotees, together. But illicit sex really spoils everything, and then just complete disaster. And this feminism is—it's a manifestation of the whole culture, for want of a better term, in which sexual looseness is encouraged, or it's the norm, and then parents that don't care for their children, and then children don't care for their parents. There's no such thing as a family. It's a joint mess. People live together and they just eat in the same house. They have no relationship with them. And it's just a disaster. Totally. This feminism is a great disaster. And our movement should be, it's a great social disaster all over the world. Our movement, if we could show a better role, that would be show how people can live happily in family life, in respectable life, responsible life, religious life. So I'm going through again. Srila Prabhupada, I'm just skipping some part here. I'll make one quote from the farm communities. Prabhupada said, a woman's real business is to look after household affairs, keep everything neat and clean, and if there is sufficient milk supply available, she should always be engaged in churning butter, making yogurt, curd, so many nice varieties, simply from milk. The woman should be cleaning, sewing like that. So Srila Prabhupada, he also engaged women in preaching, in sankirtan, and various things. But for the future, Prabhupada said, he's talking about the daughters of his disciples. Prabhupada wrote, girls should be taught how to sweep, how to stitch, clean, cook, to be faithful to the husband, obedient to the husband. Then I give an analogy that Prabhupada gradually wanted to introduce these things. It's something like, generally people, normal circumstances call for careful driving at moderate speeds. But in an emergency, you may just drive very fast, driving an ambulance very quickly. Although driving very quickly, it also increases the risk of injury and death. So it's not safe, but sometimes to save a life, you have to risk a life. So in the same way, Srila Prabhupada, he brought Krishna consciousness, and he took various risks, such as allowing the mixing of males and females. But introducing, it's an emergency. But then when there's not an immediate emergency, then better we go back to a more cautious culture, varnashram dharma, for his own followers and for the whole world also. Remember, this is not just for our own small movement. In terms of members, our movement is unfortunately very small at the moment. Another thing, Prabhupada's leading a kirtan very slowly in the beginning, gradually speeds up. But the other people who are playing the kartals, they're still going slowly. And we say, you know, you should speed up. But no, Prabhupada, he was playing like that. They didn't keep up. They didn't notice that Prabhupada had gone faster. So then everything gets out of sync. Again, quoting Yamuna Devi Dasi, I tried to become more conscious of the behavior and etiquette some leaders in ISKCON were expecting of women, even though this was the antithesis of my prior experience and training. And it is arguable that the same kind of concessions that Srila Prabhupada made are still applicable, for the influence of feminism in the West is even more pervasive than previously. Yeah, it's still like that in the West, so we can't expect that women coming in the West are going to be all ready just to change overnight. So that is an allowable, that has to be. But a counter-argument is that Prabhupada's female disciples, the at least those who are older should have understood these points and been able to present these to others and guide others, so that when others come, they can take it up. Just like I say, that Islam is the fastest growing religion in the world, although some they question that, but definitely it's growing. And the Mormon religion is also, and they have specific roles like this. So there is some devotees say, well, unless we have equal roles for men and women, then no intelligent women will join our movement. It means they just presume that unless a woman is a feminist, she's not intelligent. But if we make it like that, if we open, then we'll get all these people who are grounded in the wrong ideas. But better to give them the right idea from the beginning. And it requires a lot of preaching, no doubt. And we have to get it right. We didn't get it very right in the Western world, our initial attempts at establishing Varnashram. Those who do follow this, as Prabhupada has often, these gender roles, and happy family, that people can live happily and peacefully, chant Hare Krishna. Unfortunately, in ISKCON, we have tried this, and many have tried to follow this and failed. We are all Varna Sankara. We're coming from families where there's no culture. We don't have good sanskaras. We don't have good background. We're coming from the lowest class of people. So people have no idea how to live actually as human beings. But Srila Prabhupada wanted to introduce that, what it means to live as a civilized human being. People get married, they have no idea. They're trained at school how to learn different things so they can get a job and make money, but they're never trained how to live as a husband or as a wife. Normally the training would be there right in the culture, but that's gone. Yeah, the children go to preschool, and then they go to that's the kindergarten, and then they go to the school. They're not raised by the parents. The parents don't know how to raise children because both husband and wife are out at working. So, I better speed up a bit because I hardly started reading her letter at all. Now, a major problem that I perceive in all this is that we're just examining what Prabhupada said, but, okay, let's quote from Chaitanya Charitamrita Purport. Prabhupada quotes Narottam Das Thakur, Sadhu Shastra Guru Vakya Chitete Korya Oikya. One should understand spiritual topics by the word of the Guru, the saintly people, and Shastra. Then, he says, Shastra is the center of all. So, what Prabhupada says should be understood in a way to illuminate, or it should be in concordance with Shastra, not to contradict it. And Shastra gives, even in Srimad Bhagavatam, gives extensive directions on these matters, social matters. And tradition, I'm going to have to go through this a bit quickly here. Tradition also, Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra. Sadhu, the previous sadhu, is the whole tradition. How do we understand Shastra? We understand it through the whole tradition. That means the previous acharyas, the whole culture of Krishna consciousness has been practiced for generations. This is called shishtacha, or the behavior of cultured, civilized people. And it's in accord with what is in Shastra. Although there may be regional variations, or there may be variations within different sampradayas over certain details. But basically, every aspect of Vedic life, there's some rule. Why do people do it? Because there's some rule. And you can ask someone, why are you doing that? Because the Shastra. They can ultimately they'll take it back to Shastra. So Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra, Srila Prabhupada wanted to establish that. Now, in establishing Varnashram, as I say, we're going to have to establish a whole social system. So we can't predicate that on simply on how Srila Prabhupada treated his disciples in the West who had, as he said, they have no idea of this culture. We're going to have to look at the tradition. And this is the major point of the divide between those who we call traditionalists, otherwise called conservatives or fanatics or extremists or fundamentalists by some, and those we saw liberals, or if you also want to throw in some pejorative terms, compromisers or whatever. So there's some nasty terms being thrown around. So getting back to her letter, there are so many contradictions. So it's a heavy thing if you think your guru is not speaking clearly or honestly, or making contradictions. That means contradictions either means being deliberately misleading or not very intelligent, or I've understood the issue better than you. It's a heavy thing to say, but she's saying it. So let's. By the way, there are many in any subject that. Except maybe the most simple, there are contradictions. And it requires some intelligence to understand that, or some explanation from wise people to understand. For instance, in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna describes himself as Aja, Ajopi Sanavyatma Bhutanam Ishvaropi Sanbhut Prakritim Swamadhishtaya Sambhavami Atma Mayaya. Krishna says, I am Aja, means unborn. And then just three verses later, I believe it is, he says, Janma karma cha me divyam. He speaks about his Janma. So, it appears to be a contradiction. Is this light? Is anyone there? It's not necessarily beyond. So, there may appear to be contradictions. Unless one knows unless one understands the background. Last time I was in Bhopal, I had a meeting with some Muslims, and one young man came up to me afterward and said that I can't remember exactly what he asked, and I said, yeah, there are contradictions, apparent contradictions within the Vedic literature. He was amazed that, oh, he's admitting it. They're a contradiction. His idea is that everything should be absolutely clear, but life is more complex than that, and Krishna is more complex than that. And then afterwards I looked up and I found that, in case I had this in future, well, within Islam and the Quran there are apparent contradictions also. So that's going to... I just got an email from someone saying Prabhupada saying you should not kill. Jesus was against eating meat, and then he quoted Leviticus, I think it is, in which from the Old Testament, in which it's stated clearly that there should be meat. This and that. I don't know. I'm not a Bible scholar, but I'm just saying that apparent contradictions will arise. And there are various reasons for that. In the case of Krishna calling himself unborn and then speaking about his birth in practically the same breath, that's to be understood that Krishna has no material birth. He's not born in the same way that we are. He's born but not born. So that may appear to be a contradiction. He's the biggest, he's the smallest. He's the kindest, but if you get on the wrong side of him, he can be the most angry and cruel also. So there are apparent contradictions. I've spoken about that in various talks. It's a very interesting subject, which helps us to understand more about Krishna, about the greatness and glory and charm of Krishna. Srila Prabhupada also, there may appear to be various contradictions. For instance, in Vrindavan one time, there was one sannyasi who was staying there, and Prabhupada told him, get out on the road, don't stay more than 3 days in one place. The sannyasi should always be traveling. Then to another sannyasi, he said, you just stay here and manage. He said to one, you should always travel. That's sannyas life. Another, you stay here. That's all. So apparent contradiction. So within Prabhupada's instructions, there are also apparent contradictions. And if you, that I recently, senior female devotee, after a lecture in Mayapur, spoke about how my book lacked academic integrity, although I think she hasn't read it, by saying that even though it has so many Prabhupada's quotes, but she was suggesting that they're not taken in proper context or something, or there's some agenda or something like that. So the apparent contradictions can be the source of the way the different ways they're understood can be the source of major rifts within religious traditions. So there are many contradictions. For example, you cite examples that people would give to counteract your arguments and wave them away with describing them as hearsay. Then later you give pro-traditionalist arguments and quote Godbrother's hearsay to support it. So I asked, please be more specific, exactly which passages are you referring to? Her reply, sorry, I will have to search through the reference through reading the book again, but basically I think it's something Mataji says, like Prabhupada said, we could, and you said it's just hearsay. Although I looked, there's no, the word hearsay is not in the book. As it's just one person, yet later you quote your godbrother Yashomati Nandan Prabhu said he didn't see women giving class between different years. Well, I think that's a bit unfair to give such a heavy accusation. And well, I'm not sure. You should find it out. If you're going to make such a heavy accusation, find it out and give it. But again, anecdotal evidence, it's not rejected. But it's not primary. And what Yashomati Nandan said is backed by others. So that is, it's anecdotal evidence. It doesn't in and of itself establish anything, but it's supportive. So, getting back to her letter, I feel this book is very unfairly written. I am not in favor of women's liberation inside or outside of the movement. It is the ultimate trap built by exploitive men, but I found this book to be unfair not only to Mataji's, who have given their lives to Srila Prabhupada's movement, but also to women in general. To this, I respond that, well, you see it like that, but many women appreciate it also. So what's going on here is some subjectivism is going on here. I'm quoting from some of the appreciations of the book. One from a disciple of mine who's actually very highly educated from the material point of view, IIT graduate. Those of you who live in India know that's very prestigious. Who told me that after she understood what I was teaching, she became much more peaceful in her mind, understanding her role in society as a woman. So, but she writes here, women masters or mother is not, it is not actually a question of being one or the other. Well, I won't read the whole thing. The need of the hour is indeed to return to traditional gender roles, for as Maharaj points out, ISKCON already has many devotees competent to deliver learned lectures. But we have yet to demonstrate to the world a better way of life based on stable, happy families. So that's a quote from me. Then she writes, this book is a must read for both men and women because they must work together toward having stable Vaishnava families across the entire ISKCON society. So she feels that this will be very helpful for having stable Vaishnava families. Then this is another quote from a lady devotees. I particularly put lady devotees, their quotes. She's not an initiated disciple of mine. She wrote, the relevance of this book is by no means restricted to Vaishnavis alone. This book has answered questions that troubled me and put to rest a growing sense of disquiet that I had been experiencing as a result of what I observed around me. I urge those who are wary of picking up women masters or mothers to disabuse their minds of prejudice and preconceived notions and to take a good hard look at what it proposes. So one devotee, female devotee, very serious, good, strong, committed female devotee, she finds it unfair to women in Krishna consciousness and women in general. And others who are also very serious devotees, one of them has been a devotee as long as the one who's writing the letter, she's also been a devotee for many, many years, and she appreciates it. So how is this to be understood? One says, yes, it's very good. Another says, it's very unfair. And this lady who I'm quoting, who's been devotee for more than 20 years, she's also highly educated, PhD, and all this. So if we are to give credence to such things. So how is this to be understood? I guess it's from preconceptions. The main one being that it's actually the point of this book, is that what is the social direction that Srila Prabhupada wanted for his movement? It's Varnashram Dharma, traditional society, very different to modern society. That's the direction we have to move in. That's actually the main point of the book. So I'll read now from starting on page 48. Where to begin? The Krishna consciousness movement must choose either to try to implement Srila Prabhupada's orders regarding Varnashram Dharma or to accommodate itself with the modern world. We should make a choice. Up to now, it seems we've been trying to accommodate ourselves with the modern world. Of course, I continue, this is not a completely black and white issue because to some extent we cannot avoid adjustment with contemporary society, nor can we just flick a switch and turn on Varnashram Dharma. But we should know at least where we are supposed to be going and make serious steps in that direction. To avoid Srila Prabhupada's Varnashram mandate is Guru Ravagya, disobedience to the order of the spiritual master. If we instead try to increasingly adapt ourselves with non-devotees, we risk minimizing our connection with Srila Prabhupada. So it's a very serious thing. Prabhupada, he wanted us to establish Varnashram. And if instead we say, well, we can't do it, it's irrelevant, it's just some Indian mumbo-jumbo, we don't want to be Indians. I'm not saying that the lady who wrote this letter to me is saying that, but there are others who are very clearly saying this, and they're very vociferously stating it. Srila Prabhupada engaged his followers, male and female, in transcendental activities, such as preaching, distributing the books, going on Harinam Sankirtan. And by the way, talking about we just can't do it immediately, it just struck me this morning as I was meeting so many devotees that there's one lady who's, she's a teacher in a school, and she'd asked me that, well, should now I came to Krishna consciousness and I understood maybe it's not so good I'm working, but in the school, I'm preaching to the students, and she's always giving books and magazines. It's a Christian school, so she has to do it underground. And I said, yeah, it's good. You're doing that preaching. Good, you go on with that. Not that you neglect your household duties, but you can continue with that. So it's not that I'm insisting that all of my disciples, they have to immediately change in all ways. I'm not so unpragmatic, just for your information. So Srila Prabhupada engaged devotees in this way, but at the same time he wanted to establish Varnashram. Sorry if I'm being repetitive, but I'm going to have to say these things over and over again. That is to be the future of ISKCON, and it will be different. It's not that for all time in the future we're going to have men and women going out on book distribution. Of course, book distribution will go on, but on the farm communities, they won't be doing book distribution. They're going to be doing seed distribution. it's different. Of course, if people come, but people come, then they can give them books. But it's not. It's different. It's not the same as going out and preaching. But it is a kind of preaching, and it's because it shows a better way to live. It is an important part of preaching, also how practically we are to live. In Srila Prabhupada's books, he strongly condemns this nasty Western culture. What's our alternative? After so many years, we should have some alternative to show. We don't have that. The need of the hour is to establish this. So that is the future. And some things, we say, well, we should just follow what Prabhupada said. Of course we have to follow what Prabhupada said, but then like I said, we have to see the whole picture also. There may be some apparent contradictions. Just like Prabhupada, he gave Brahminical initiation. Generally, someone came and they'd get initiated quite quickly with Harinam, and then some short time after that, he'd give Brahmin initiation. Myself, I think I was 5 months, maybe just 4 months in the movement, and I got Harinam initiation. And within less than 1 year, I was Brahminically initiated. That was a bit quick, even in those days. But there are many times in letters and in lectures, Prabhupada, he said that we don't initiate everyone as a Brahmin. So that was something that would change. And if we are going to have Varnashram, it is meaningless if we just initiate everyone as a Brahmin. There has to be some division. Some things that Prabhupada did, he didn't want to continue. For instance, freely giving Brahminical initiation. On page 25 of this book, I write, this revolution, I'm talking about Srila Prabhupada's Varnashram revolution, affects all aspects of human life and proposes to revamp social organization on a basis that is completely different from that of any revolution conceived in terms of alternate forms for eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. Then I quote from Prabhupada, there should be a thorough overhauling of the social system and society should revert to the Vedic principles, that is the four varnas and the four ashrams. So Srila Prabhupada is talking about a thorough overhauling. So we better get, if we're going to be part of that, if we're going to be part of what Prabhupada wanted us to do, then we're going to have to, the first thing is going to have to thoroughly overhaul our whole understanding of how we're supposed to live in human society. What are our roles? Okay, page 28. Oh, I already... Srila Prabhupada slowly and carefully introduced the Vedic culture. He came with spiritually... Prabhupada came to the West with spiritually revolutionary intent, but he adapted and adjusted as necessary, to some extent integrating local norms and practices, as was required for introducing Krishna consciousness in such an alien ethos. It was impossible, practically. How can you spread Krishna consciousness in the West? It seemed impossible. At the outset, while clearly expressing his spiritual aims, he spoke little about his social plans. As an expert teacher, he did not attempt to do the impossible among the wild and uncouth hippies who mostly comprised his early followers. I don't think that's an insult to say that. It's just a It's more to see the glory of Prabhupada that he made such unlikely people into devotees of Krishna. Srila Prabhupada stated that Vedic culture is a very difficult civilization for the Westerners. So Srila Prabhupada in the beginning induced them to take prasad, chant Hare Krishna and hear Vaishnava philosophy without introducing many of the finer points of Vedic culture. And he largely overlooked in the beginning the free mixing of young men and women, although he did ask those of his disciples who were living together as couples to marry. And it wasn't until several years after founding ISKCON that he began to press his disciples to institute Varnashram Dharma with all its attendant usages, although he'd already discussed it in his books. If there's time, I'll get back to that, because I asked that, what's your understanding? You have all these criticisms. What's your understanding of Prabhupada? He wrote in his book so many things about how Brahmanas live, how Kshatriyas live, how Vaishyas live, how Shudras live, women's role. Was Prabhupada wrote about this. Why? Was it some nostalgia or just some anthropological study? Prabhupada, he wrote about this because this may be disputed, but he wrote about this because he wanted us to adopt this as far as possible. This is the direction we should be going in. That is civilized human society. So Prabhupada, step by step, he brought in these principles. He wanted this to be introduced. By the way, while I'm quoting here, I'm often quoting from what others have written also. In fact, this whole book, it's a condensation of points that myself and others have made over many years in various fora. So my name is there as the author, but as many devotees have pointed out, there are many, many quotes from Srila Prabhupada. I think even those who don't like it, they don't like the book, they at least have to acknowledge that there are many, many quotes. This is from a godbrother of mine. He wrote to me in a letter. Srila Prabhupada acted atypical to his long-term message by encouraging and permitting his female disciples to live in the centers and to go out preaching around Sankirtan. He was not trying to change things overnight and helped those in female bodies the best he could given the circumstances, but he was always aware of what would be better. He helped those in female bodies the best he could, because this should be the subject of an essay, but actually Srila Prabhupada found out early on that his female disciples, there were certain things they just weren't ready to accept at all. Continuing, I don't think he was disturbed in any way by the thought of our god sisters distributing books or participating in the public chanting and dancing of the Hare Krishna mantra. If he were, then he would have been guilty of using the Matajis, even though he thought this activity was polluting them. He was happy for them and saw how this was very good for them, but he wanted them to be protected and the future to be different overall. Women having to go out to work, even in the West, not too long ago, was considered a great shame on the man. You can't support your wife. You're sending out your wife to work. A daughter or sister having to woo a man with her body was abominable, and their protectors might soundly thrash a man for approaching his sister or daughter. But nowadays the parents say, they expect the girl, go out, find a boy. Even the girl might want to dress chastely. Here in India, they get them tight jeans for the girls. I've heard such things. The parents want the children, the girls, to be like prostitutes. Actually, that's the word which Srila Prabhupada often used. So it's become a horrible society. First Brahmin initiation was done in Boston in, I believe, 1968. First of all, Srila Prabhupada gave it to three male disciples, Pradyumna, Gaurasundara, and one other, maybe Satsarup, I'm not sure, probably. But there were female devotees there also, and they were very upset. Prabhupada saw this, and the next day he gave them also. So initially he wasn't going to, but this is described by Govindasi, as she calls herself, because Prabhupada used to pronounce it like that. Govindasi. So she explained, there was herself, Jadurani, and Annapurna, I believe, three female devotees, and they were very upset. And then Prabhupada gave them but in the lecture that Prabhupada gave with the Brahminical initiation for the women, Prabhupada gave the whole lecture on how actually women should be married. There's no need for women to have Brahmin initiation, because if the husband is a Brahmin, she's a Brahmin, and if the woman is a Brahmin and her husband is not a Brahmin, what's the meaning of it? Now another point about menstruation. I'm not supposed to talk about this. I've been censured for doing this, but I've described, well, I'll get back to that later again, if there's time. I hope you've all got time, because it's a lot of discussion here. I didn't put this in the book. This was a letter written on the 1st of July, 1999, to the Deity Worship Conference on the Pam Ho email system. So this is written by Kusha Devi Dasi, one of Srila Prabhupada's disciples, one of those who was most vocal in telling my disciples in Vrindavan what a useless guru they've got, and getting the book banned from selling. So she wrote, Gaurasundara and Govindasi, husband and wife team, were Srila Prabhupada's servant and secretary, 1967 and 1968. His divine grace requested Govindasi to take a 3-day break from her duties from the first day of her period. She reacted in such a way as to reject her Guru Maharaj's instructions because she didn't want to leave his personal service or presence. She did not want to surrender to Srila Prabhupada's request. So his divine grace said, it doesn't matter. Again, on another occasion, Govindadasi was dyeing Srila Prabhupada's dhoti saffron with a special rock. Srila Prabhupada noticed some reddish, off-colored fluid on the floor and asked her if menstruation was the cause. If so, she should refrain from her regular service and take 3 days off. She explained it's from the cloth color. So for many years, she followed this in this order, and she became disappointed with herself that Prabhupada told her to do something and she hadn't done it. So Kusha Devi Dasi writes that Srila Prabhupada wanted that ladies should take 3 days off from all deity seva. This includes cooking and sewing. Due to initial rebellion and lack of information, this fact is not widely known. I hope this pastime sheds some light on the fact that we should be following the 3 days off rule as instructed by Srila Prabhupada early in the establishment of our beloved ISKCON. In Bharatvarsha, followers of Sanatana Dharma respectfully observe this rule as per Vedic prescription. So this is strong evidence that Prabhupada, he relaxed the rules for his female disciples. He didn't make up new ones, but he's seeing that they just didn't want to follow it. And Prabhupada did, rather than disturb their minds, he let them go on with it, although it's not something that he particularly wanted. Shubhag Maharaj is an Indian devotee who joined in the West, and Ram Shraddha is another. I'm not sure if he joined in the West, but he was in the West for quite a long time. He's Aya by background. He's from Hyderabad. Great cook. Aya's a great means. Tamil smarter Brahmin family. So he also said. They both said that Prabhupada had told them that you can learn philosophy and dedication from the Western devotees, but culture you don't. You keep the culture you got in your home. Not that you take their culture. I want to make a point. I have to meet Ram Shadharan sometime. Keep off, put off these things and then it never get round to it. I'll just make a point of it. Hope he's in mind for the next time I go. You can all take a break here. I guess you weren't ready for this. It's almost 2 hours and it's still not halfway through yet. So, okay, I'll just skip that. There are so many points. I'm going to have to skip over some things. Here's something written to me, or sent to me, by her husband, by another lady disciple of mine. I guess this may not apply. See, I'm gradually replying to this letter of that lady devotee, but I'm not only taking up the points which she has raised, but I'm including different objections that have been raised by others. So I'm not blaming her per se if I'm taking up points which she hasn't herself personally raised. So she wrote, I guess some Matajis feel cornered by even the mere existence of a book that speaks about the traditional role of women because their understanding of that is being backward, repressive, and miserable. I guess words and rational arguments will not be enough to persuade them unless they can see happy devotees living in a traditional Varnashram society. And perhaps for some, even that will not be enough. I write this in the book also, that instead of talking about it, we actually have to establish communities in which we can show this. It's not an easy thing. And like I say, there are those who they're just practically praying, Dear Krishna, may these communities fail. Isn't it? We seem to have some evidence of that. They seem to be so envious, actually. So we're trying for that. And perhaps for some, even that will not be enough. You see, just like we have lady devotees coming from the West to India and preaching to... They come and they preach to the Indian Matajis in Mayapur that why are you serving your husband? He's explaining this, that, and they're living happily at home. And then one day the husband comes home and the wife, blah, 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 what happened? Yeah. She was quite happy and peaceful until she was told, and there's not, it's in a devotee in Japan said the same thing. We have all these lady preachers when they come around, life at home is hell for 2 weeks and then they calm down until they come again. Because they're preaching all these things. Why are you just being a wife? Self-fulfillment, blah, 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 blah. They're actually disturbing women who are quite peacefully executing their roles. So that's... So what I see... it's something... This topic which I'm speaking on again, which I spoke on after... In Vrindavan, I spoke practically a recap of this book. And again, I'm speaking it. Why am I speaking again and again the same things? It's something like Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur introducing the social change within Vaishnava society of initiating Vaishnavas as Brahmanas. It's something like that. It's not exactly the same, but he had to, if you see his writings and those of his followers, again and again and again, they state the same points. You'll find in the Gaudiya magazine, Bengali magazine of the Gaudiya Math, again and again and again, they speak on this point, because you have to repeat it again and again and again, because people, again, and wherever you go, wherever he goes, someone will come up to Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, why are you doing this? This is wrong, this is against the tradition. And they would say, no, this is restoring the tradition, actually. This is according to Shastra, restoring the tradition has become broken down. So he may say, well, why do you want to follow Indian tradition if it's broken down? Well, we have to take those parts which are good. Just like I was just hearing this morning, Srila Prabhupada spoke about how even though we don't accept the caste system by birth, still there's a difference. People are born in Brahmin families, they still have a culture. Generally speaking, more than those in the than in other castes. And he gave the example that in Calcutta, in the police force, mostly the Brahmins, for some reason or other, joined the police force, and there was an arrangement that each one would cook for themselves, because they wouldn't take food from anyone else, even from their wife, because Prabhupada said a woman is considered on the level of a Shudra. They'd cook for themselves, very neat and clean, quickly. They'd cook at midday, and they were shvapaki. That means they'd only take what they cook for themselves. And many of them joined the railways also. They'd be station managers, so they'd be doing their sandhya vandanam at midday and worshipping shalagram in between them. Something like Muslims up to the present day. If you go in Saudi Arabia, everything closes down during the day, there's a time for the namaz. So he had to speak about it again and again and again and again. It wasn't his main message, he saw that it was required, and therefore he did it. He could have not done it, but he saw that it was required. There was a major social change that was needed, and he had to go on preaching about it again and again and again, and still many didn't change. So I don't expect to change the minds of those who are committed in a certain way, but at least I want to present that there is, at least there is a strong case, although others will say, no, you're just misrepresenting Prabhupada. And I'll say, well, you're misrepresenting Prabhupada. Hare Krishna. Well, no one can disagree that Srila Prabhupada... And also, saying this again and again and again, because those who want to follow these things within our society, they'll come under attack from others. Why are you doing like that? Why the women, blah, 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 not doing this, not doing that? And they're quite happy in their role, in their constitutional position, but they become attacked by others. They may become disturbed. So we have to repeat these things again and again. No one can disagree that Prabhupada wanted to introduce Varnashram. So how do you get around that? Now I'm going to read from a paper from Krishnakirti Prabhu, quoting from what? A meeting of the women's ministry or something like Vaishnavi ministry or something like that. They wrote, Vedic life as extolled in our scriptures is highly interpretive. Understanding what is truly Vedic is elusive. Srila Prabhupada taught us about Vedic society and the role of Varnashram in elevating society, but he did not, practically speaking, engage his spiritual daughters within such a system. They were active preachers, pujaris, cooks, etc. Srila Prabhupada, in fact, introduced a new model with new standards, one based on preaching. So you can't avoid that Prabhupada wanted Varnashram, but they say he introduced a new model of Varnashram based on preaching, in which women have the same role as men, although Prabhupada never said such a thing. So Here's another quote from the book The Final Order, which has been completely debunked by Rochan Prabhu, that he's writing about the Ritvik system. Now, if you read through all the Shastras and all of Prabhupada's books all your life, you'll never have any idea that there should be a Ritvik system. It's a complete fabrication. But the final order, Krishna Kandisai, the great Acharya of the modern age, writes that the one who has understood Prabhupada's teachings on this point, which no one else could, we required him to descend from the spiritual world in his dirty shorts, which he doesn't change for days on end. He wrote that the important point is that although the Ritvik system may be totally unique, it does not violate higher order Shastric principles. It is testament to Srila Prabhupada's genius that he was able to mercifully apply such Shastric principles in new and novel ways according to time, place, and circumstance. So this statement from the final order is for the Ritvik doctrine, which has been condemned as heresy within ISKCON. And the first statement was made by some of Srila Prabhupada's senior women devotees and represents a view that is practically adopted as the official social policy of the ISKCON movement. So one is considered heretical and the other is considered, yes, this is it. That's good. Both statements claim that Prabhupada established something new and unprecedented and that the new thing he establishes to be practiced indefinitely. Both rely fundamentally on the pragmatist notion of time, place, and circumstance, and both have the effect of either discounting or obfuscating tradition or significant sections of Srila Prabhupada's own life work, his books. In the women's statement, evidence from previous acharyas is discounted. In both of them. As long as Ritvikism supposedly follows higher order Shastric principles, whatever that means, that means we don't follow Shastra, we follow what we understand Shastra to mean according to our own imagination. Tradition need not be consulted. Tradition and the statements of previous acharyas are considered irrelevant. In the first statement, wide swaths of Srila Prabhupada's own teachings themselves become incomprehensible. The word Varnashram occurs more than 1,000 times in Srila Prabhupada's published works. But if understanding it is truly elusive, as they say, then that leaves much in Srila Prabhupada's life works that is incomprehensible. If Varnashram is incomprehensible, then it becomes impossible to implement Srila Prabhupada's order that Varnashram be established within ISKCON, unless you make some... It's incomprehensible, it's elusive, but we have understood that because Prabhupada engaged men and women in the same way, this is the new version of Varnashram, although Prabhupada never said such a thing. And in fact, he described the traditional model, and Shastra describes a traditional model. But they've so large parts of Shastra and Prabhupada's teachings, they're just all swept away with some higher order understanding of what Prabhupada himself couldn't make clear. That's what they're saying. It's something like St. Paul. He reinterpreted Jesus. In the whole of Christianity is something quite different to what Jesus taught himself. Here's a quote from Burke Rochford, a scholar who studied the Hare Krishna movement, his book called Hare Krishna Transformed. He notes that Prabhupada's authority in ISKCON is no longer absolute. He writes, "The debate about women's roles and place in ISKCON led to critical questioning of Srila Prabhupada's scriptural commentaries, as well as his overall authority as Krishna's pure representative." That's very heavy, isn't it? Because Prabhupada gave very heavy statements about women, and there's been some of his disciples who said, well, they question it. So the fact that, so they question that, and then there was a whole thing, this is some years ago, when there was something came out on some email when one female initiated person, I wouldn't call it devotee, she wrote actually very blasphemous things because she wouldn't accept what Prabhupada had stated and what Shastra states. She blasphemed Srila Prabhupada and Lord Rama for his, what she considered to be his bad treatment of Sita. And there was a few devotees and myself, we were pressing the GBC to act on this. But they didn't. And it describes in this whole chapter how our attempt to do something about this failed because the leadership for political, they said it was politically correct, politically manageable, I can't remember the word, to just ignore those who are making the protest. The fact that the leadership failed to act decisively on Prabhupada's behalf when his authority was being openly challenged was an acknowledgement that his authority no longer was absolute. Given ISKCON's increasingly pluralistic membership, it was perhaps inevitable that Prabhupada's teachings would be questioned, especially in light of their past misuse, resulting in the abuse of devotee women and children. As one ISKCON leader expressed it, there is an irreducible diversity within ISKCON. It is a mistake trying to find the straight line. So in other words, there's nothing clear in Prabhupada's teachings according to this. What is important is whether a devotee fits within the boundaries of Prabhupada's teachings. Yet as these this is Burke Rochford writing, an outside scholar, as these teachings become reframed as guides for thought and action, in place of being absolute truth, traditionalism will continue its march to the margins of ISKCON, as it does, the goal of creating a viable cultural alternative to mainstream American culture will cease to exist. So, if this is true, then Prabhupada and his legacy are further away from ISKCON's center than at any other time in history. Western culture has emerged victorious from ISKCON's struggles. So maybe we're just wasting our time. According to Burke Rochford, it's already gone. It's too late. Maybe what are we doing in this movement which has deviated in a very important way from Prabhupada's instructions? So, getting back to the letter from this lady disciple of mine in the West, she writes, "We have always had a close relationship and I love you with all my heart, but I have to be honest and to say any less than how I feel would be misleading to you as my guru, as a writer, and to you as my closest friend. Please read my letter carefully and consider the points." It's very interesting. More than once she asked to read the letter carefully. And I'm saying, read the book carefully. So it's a case of, as William Blake said, we both read the Bible day and night, but where you see black, I see white. And interestingly, one lady devotee recently pointed this out to me, that Shiva and Parvati were both present when Chitraketu joked or insulted Lord Shiva. Lord Shiva took it one way and she took it completely differently. She understood it completely differently. So what is to do? I mean, practically speaking, there's no solution. In as much as there's no solution in terms of the movement that everyone's going to come together to one point. It's not going. I think we should just accept the fact that we do have a deep cultural diversity, and where do we go from here? Where do I go from here? In the letter that was given to the president of ISKCON Vrindavan, saying that he wrote that even though this book has many quotes from Prabhupada, it's a complete misunderstanding of his teaching. But then I say, well, you've misunderstood it also. Some of the women who are protesting, they know they've been married and divorced several times. They're devotees. They're dedicated to Prabhupada. But socially, they haven't been able. They've done great service for Prabhupada. But socially, for whatever reason. And it may be the husband is just completely off or whatever. But they, for whatever reason, they haven't been able to live up to the social role that Prabhupada wanted. So these are things we should consider. Of course, our movement has considered it, and they've set up, in North America, they set up the North America Grihastha Advisory Board or something, and they try to counsel devotees how to make their marriage good, but they do it all on the basis of modern psychology, which isn't going to work, because modern psychology is based on so many misconceptions. It's not based on Shastric principles of how the man should be... They're not equal partners. Spiritually equal, but materially the man is supposed to take charge and the wife is supposed to serve. So, please read my letter carefully and consider the points I've made below. See, we didn't even get to her points. For me are the main misgivings I found in your book. In other words, she has more. Although I'm very upset, I don't want to focus on my feelings in this letter, although undoubtedly they come through. Rather, I would prefer to stick to the points in the book which I feel have brought me to this place. Please forgive me. I don't want to offend you, and I feel that you have not willfully meant to offend anyone, but nonetheless, the book, worded as it is, has had that effect on me, and I suspect other Matajis also. Yeah, it seems some find it offensive, but on the other hand, are we going to bury these issues forever? If you bring it out at all, someone's going to get offended. But on the so, what do we do? Should we just go along and just people like why should they get offended if you present that Prabhupada wanted this? What he wanted. How do I do it in such a way? How is it possible to do it in such a way that people don't get offended? If someone can do it, well, all glories to them. But we do have, on the other hand, very aggressive preaching from the feminist party, like I say, coming to places in India and preaching the wrong thing against the culture, which so my aim is not to offend others, but she feels offended. It's a very heavy thing if you feel your guru's offensive. So she quotes from page 173, women giving class and leading kirtan, quote from a letter written by Srila Prabhupada, 8th of February 1968. Materially, a woman may be less intelligent than a man, but spiritually, everyone is pure soul. In the absolute plane, there is no gradation of higher or lower. If a woman can lecture nicely and to the point, we should hear carefully. That is our philosophy. But if a man can speak better than a woman, the man should be given first preference. Then Srila Prabhupada states, but even though a woman may be less intelligent, a sincere soul should be given a proper chance to speak. And then she writes, so Srila Prabhupada is making it crystal clear here where he stands on this issue. And my comment on that is that crystal clear, you have understood it clearly, whereas so many others haven't. You know, for you take one quote of Prabhupada, and that's what I was accused of. What is it? Not having academic integrity. You just take a quote and you don't see all the other quotes. I have suggested how women should be given a proper chance to speak. They can do among themselves. They can have their own satsangs among women. And this letter was written in 1968. It's widely accepted among Srila Prabhupada's followers that Srila Prabhupada did go through various phases of introducing his movement. I mean, even there's a sannyasi who's on these issues completely opposite to me. We have discussed these issues in depth, and we agree. And it's also, I was trying to find it in one of the Satsarupa books, but I couldn't find it. It's that Prabhupada, in the beginning, he was very open and free, and he engaged devotees completely on the transcendental platform without much consideration of male or female roles. Although actually, from the beginning, the leaders, the temple leaders, were men. When he made the GBC, he made men only. There is a record, as I note in the book, that at one time he thought of making Yamuna and Govinda Dasi together, one, they could have half a vote each. So two of them together could be GBCs. And then Yamuna said, I don't think it'll work. And then Prabhupada dropped it. So he thought about it at some point. But then later Srila Prabhupada, he tightened up because he saw that devotees, Prabhupada was shocked, it seems, in the beginning. They take vows and then they don't follow them. They fall down. And he was quite shocked. How can his disciples, that you got Krishna consciousness, and then you vow, and then you just, men and women within the movement are having illicit, among themselves are having illicit sex. And so then Prabhupada, he did become, he changed course and he tightened up. And he spoke about the need for this more and more. So I'm not saying they shouldn't be given a proper chance to speak, but preferably, and this would be more so in India, although Prabhupada did have his female disciples speak publicly on occasion in India also. But like I say, that wasn't the ultimate route. He engaged them transcendentally. But at the same time, he saw that increasingly he became more strict about this as he saw that there were so many fall downs. Then she writes, here is where I find imbalance. The founder Acharya has spoken on the standard to be followed in regard to kirtaning class in his movement, and then shockingly for me as a disciple, you come and elaborate on this, adding from 74 to 77, there was not a single instance of a woman lecturing, whereas dozens of men did. Why does that change the order of Srila Prabhupada? That other devotees did not enforce Srila Prabhupada's instruction means his order means nothing. Well, Prabhupada must have seen this also. That's like this, there's something about the direction of management and that wasn't implemented, and we don't find anything in Prabhupada's written instructions that it shouldn't be implemented. But at least according to Harishari Prabhu, that Prabhupada said that would introduce too much politics. And so he didn't enforce it. So, there may be, again, I'm not completely against all these things. In certain circumstances, women may preach also. There is a difference also. Someone's older, mature. Prabhupada, if a man can speak better than a woman, the man should be given first preference. It may be in some assembly that the woman is more mature devotee, and there are hardly any men who know how to speak. But especially young women, it doesn't look right at all that they're lecturing. And if there are senior men who can speak, then why should women do that? It's as I write in the book that if they show that the best women are those who get out in the world and they become big traveling preachers and they're the great ones and they're just like, then that becomes the role model. And then who's going to be the wife looking after the children? That's a major point of this book, that the major sufferers from independent, ambitious women, which I'm not saying the devotee who wrote this is, because I know she's not. But the main sufferers are the children. And even in the name of preaching, we see women, oh, I have to preach, I have to make more devotees, bring more disciples to Guru Maharaj, I have to distribute more books, and the kids are at home, nothing to eat. Then she writes, Prabhupada not only personally asked Mother Jamuna to lead kirtan, he asked her to lead kirtan in front of thousands of Indians when he returned to India with his dancing. white elephants, Western disciples, not even mentioned in your book. That's true, there are many things which are not mentioned. It's not a whole history of every incident that ever happened. But I think it's a good... this comment is a good incentive to write a detailed essay on, if you want to get all the points. Not that anyone's going to change their mind by reading it, but so many different points. For instance, this one. Although I did make the point in the book that Prabhupada sometimes had his female disciples speak personally in his presence. Let's see if I can just find that. Yeah, overall within ISKCON it was quite rare that women would give lectures. That was my experience also. In fact, after I'd been in the movement just a short time, one lady devotee came and she gave... I think she came from France and she more or less insisted... No women weren't giving lectures and she more or less insisted that she did. And she said something which completely upset all the devotees. Some quote from Prabhupada that we're... all of his disciples are going to fall down. And the devotees were just really not very happy with that. And I didn't see women give lectures again. Of course, that's just what she said. It doesn't mean that every woman would say such strange things. Then you give the point that Bhaktivinoda Thakur said that women should preach to women. Yes, that is true. And he is undoubtedly a pure devotee who envisioned Lord Chaitanya's movement spreading all over the world. However, Srila Prabhupada once explained that when he came to the West, he introduced Krishna consciousness like old wine in new bottles. He prayed at Boston Pier to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, for empowerment of speech. He prayed, "My dear Lord, I hardly know why you have brought me here. I am a puppet in your hands. If you like, you can make me dance." He prayed for me and you and thousands of others, stating how I will make them understand Krishna's message. How will I make them understand Krishna's message? "I am unqualified, unworthy, and an insignificant beggar. If you like, you can make my words suitable for their hearing." The disciplic succession, although an unbroken chain of spiritual masters leading back to the Supreme Lord, each as qualified as the next, is also a succession. Each teacher appears in a certain order. That order was the will of the Supreme Lord. Prabhupada is our founder, Acharya, and as such, he strictly told his disciples, "You should understand my spiritual master through me," and actually told one of his disciples, "Don't read the teachings of Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj, you will not understand. Don't try to be like a monkey and jump over the head of your spiritual master." In other words, he also told devotees there is succession, and Prabhupada is our founder, Acharya. He has said in his movement, "Women can give class to me." That clearly shows what Bhaktivinoda Thakur said about women preaching only to women is not applicable in this instance. Well, that is a major misunderstanding of the principle of disciplic succession. It's guru, sadhu, and shastra. Prabhupada did write one letter about not... You didn't read my book, so why do you want to read other books? But then right in his preface to the introduction to Srimad Bhagavatam, he writes that devotees should read the commentaries, and he gives the names of so many commentators, including that of his own guru, should read the commentaries of other acharyas in order to better understand the matter. Again, you see, so it seems contradictory. I'm being accused of being contradictory, but Prabhupada in one place says to one person, says, "Don't read," and in another place he says, "You should read." So, how are we to understand this? It's something like the Ridvik philosophy, that we just accept Prabhupada and what he says, and we don't care what anyone else says. But Prabhupada himself says that he follows Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra. This is a major misunderstanding. If we are going to implement Varnashram, the perfect system for human civilization as far as possible, we're going to have to look at how it was implemented previously. We're going to have to look at what our previous acharyas said. So this is in other words, if we think that what Prabhupada gave to the hippies, that's the social model forever. Without connection with tradition or shastra. We're going to be in a mess. Women dancing a kirtan. Again, Indian standards are brought in. And that's it. And again, it's another... What Indian? Indian means the culture that is based on the Vedic tradition. Why? Why is this? Because the whole Varnashram system, as I quote Prabhupada said, the Varnashram system is to... Because material life is based... Pungsastriya mituni bhavametam tayoraho hridaya grantyamahuhu ato grihakshetra sutaptavitai janasya moho yamaham manaiti. Material existence is based on attachment between male and female. The whole Vedic culture is meant to minimize that and so that we can prosecute spiritual life. I quote Srila Prabhupada in this book as saying that. So the Vedic culture, the remnants of which are going on today in India, Indian culture, Hindu culture, whatever you want to call it, it's not just something Indian, that we're Western and those are Indians. You appreciate that it's Western. Prabhupada, as you said, appreciated this Western disciples with enthusiasm. Danced. The fact is that Srila Prabhupada taught all his early disciples the Swami step and even lead guests, both women and men, in preaching programs very joyfully with both hands in the air to follow him in the Swami step. If Prabhupada did not want women to give class, lead kirtan or dance, he could have made it known, which he did not at any time, although he did make it very clear that he did not want women to live independently. I fully agree with those quotes, thank you. And to travel independently, I agree with also those of Prabhupada's words. I have no problem accepting those instructions. But for women not to give class, lead kirtans or dance, I'm sorry that was never said by our founder Acharya. And never said by me also. So, to add extra rules to the movement gives the same message as taking away rules or instructions that he so mercifully gave us. He said in his final days that he has given us everything, and who could have given us more? Again, it's misunderstanding. Prabhupada said, I've given you all that you need to become fully Krishna conscious. Okay? But as far as the... But he said also that 50% of my work is not to be done. So he gave us the full process, the full philosophy for Krishna consciousness. And he wanted to give that Varnashram. So, and Varnashram society means there are many rules to follow. So... It will be different, and it's not going to be for everyone. It's not that I'm saying that everyone has to immediately change their whole social culture immediately. I'm not saying that. So, sorry if I give the idea. Maybe I should make that more clear in another edition. Another doubt that has arisen in this book: why do you refer to menstruation? Why are devotees approaching a sannyasi in regard to the physical function of the female body? Don't they have any senior women to ask these questions to? Well, as I write in this book, it's very strange that a sannyasi is asked about this, but actually I am often asked about this, usually not by women, usually by men, husbands, and whatever. Because we have within India now devotees going around and preaching that they should... Women should come to the temple during their menstruation period. And so I'm asked about this, I guess because I'm considered somewhat of an authority on Vedic culture within our movement, because I've been studying it for many years with an idea to implement this. And actually, if you're upset by this book, you're really going to get upset when I bring out my book on Vaishnava culture and behavior, because there are so many rules. There are so many things. Just like your son was sitting on the seat above us this morning, I told him, take him down, teach him. How old is he? 4 years old? So you should teach him. He shouldn't sit above elders. You have to teach. So if I said that to some, they might just get annoyed. But there's so many things. In America, earlier this year, I said to it, I was sitting on the floor and there was a disciple sitting above me, young brahmachari. I told him, I was thinking whether, should I tell him or not, because you know, he might file a legal case against me or something. You know. But I told him that it's not proper. So there are so many rules like that, which are part of Vedic culture. And Prabhupada, for instance, sometimes I first learned that you're not supposed to give or receive things with your right hand. I remember I was sitting in an Ayurvedic doctor's shop in, there was the doctor who treated Prabhupada, Dr. Damodar Shastri, Damodar Prasad or something like this, in Kalaka Street in Borobazar. I was sitting there with Jai Pataka Maharaj, and I gave him something, and he corrected me. He said, you have to give it with the right hand. So I didn't know that before. And you'll find in Prabhupada's teachings that he says these things time to time, right hand. But he didn't introduce it all at once, obviously. Devotees, they just to get up in the morning and chant Hare Krishna and follow four regs, that's about as much as people can take. But if we are to establish civilized behavior for human beings, then as Prabhupada writes, the Manu Sanghita is the standard book for directing human society. So that will also require to be seen what we can take from that, what we can't take from that. We're definitely going to have to introduce various rules for social order. Then she writes about how I got it wrong, that women who are breastfeeding, they don't menstruate. So I looked it up on the internet. It's not true in all cases. And I'll just skip through that a bit. So Prabhupada told Matajis living in America during their menstrual period, although I do not have access to it at this time, I know Prabhupada was once asked a question by one of his then Tamil presidents in regard to what ladies should do during this time. He said they should rest and do a little cleaning if possible. Another time he told the Tamil president in America that each Mataji living in Tamil should be given a handful of raisins every day to keep up their iron levels during this time. Srila Prabhupada allowed women to live in the temple, what to speak of not visit the temple during their period. What are women who live in the temple supposed to do during their period? Sleep on the doorstep. It clearly was not an issue for Srila Prabhupada, a handful of raisins and little cleaning up all the references. Again, go back to the introduction where I said this will be especially germane for devotees living in India. If we are going to introduce Vedic culture, gradually these things could be introduced in the West also, because it's just like, it's unclean. It's like having dysentery or something. You're constantly unclean. It was clearly not an issue for Srila Prabhupada. A handful of raisins and little kidney should have been a big issue. He'd put in more regulations. As long as they're not engaged in deity worship or making contact with things which are needed in the deity service, Prabhupada didn't really say anything about it. I know since I joined, we were told by senior ladies not to go around Tulsi or touch her also during this time. About it removing the duration of life from a man to see a woman in this condition and removing his knowledge, I can only conclude that this quote, like many in the book, was neither given to us by Srila Prabhupada or explained by him. So I don't know why it is given at all if all it will do is to take the whole issue out of context. Again, Shastra in the center. These are statements from Shastra. It's really going to be tough establishing this. We can understand that Prabhupada didn't say this, so finished. Varnashram means, Prabhupada's idea of Varnashram is that women and men are all the same. And you live on farms, and women and men, they all do the same things. There's no distinction. So that's how. But here in India, at least, there are many devotees, and even actually not even our devotees. Many people who are members of different Hindu organizations, even Mayavadis, they understand the importance of this Vedic culture and they want to bring it in. With one major exception, is that most of them, they're not, this point of separating men and women, they're not very strong in it. One exception is the Swami Narayan Sampradaya, they're strong on that. And they've been fooled by Western propaganda. And also there are some Vedic scholars who say that women and men were all the same in past times, and they a common thing, they quote exceptions to make that a rule, because you have in the Upanishads this Gargi is challenging Yajnavalkya. She's a woman, she argues with him. She's a Brahmavadini, she's described as a spiritual philosopher. But that's not the general standard. There may be exceptions in any society, but that's not the general standard. No doubt there are very good devotees who in female bodies, so maybe millions of times more advanced than I can ever imagine to be. And they can maintain their Krishna consciousness and do preaching and do so many things. But for general people, they have to be regulated society in specific roles, so that they can progress properly according to their level, Brahman, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra, or woman. It's women, their role, that's described in Srimad Bhagavatam. There are roles for Brahmana men, roles for Kshatriya men, roles for Vaishya men, roles for Shudra men, and the woman's role is to assist her husband in whichever role he has. She doesn't have a separate varna of her home. And then two more points that really disturb me. The point of a woman marrying upward. Yeah, this is not from Shastra. That's the fact. The quote that it's about polygamy. What she's mixing up, I'm not saying that this necessarily applies to our movement. She's saying, I can't imagine why any man in our movement would want to marry more than one woman. Well, one reason, which she might not have thought about, it might not be just for lust, but to give protection. That's what Prabhupada said, that men are allowed to have more than one woman because generally there are more women in society and they require a husband. So for that reason, they may do so also. It's going to be a difficult one to promote. But there are cultures in the world up to the present day where, in Africa, there are some cultures where the women, they want that their husband should marry, if he has enough income, he should marry more than one wife. She likes it. And why is he being so mean? He doesn't want to spend more money. They like the idea that they can live together as sisters and share the work, and they think it's prestigious because my husband's more rich. He can marry more than one wife. So there are different approaches. So within our movement, it's not... That may not apply. I may not express myself clearly because sometimes I'm speaking about general principles which apply to people in general. Sometimes I'm speaking about devotees. Maybe I didn't make myself clear. Why would it be presumed then we would accept money contributions for what would be nothing less than prostitution? Well, there is a difference, but a woman who wants to marry a rich man, and generally women would like to marry a rich man, it's a very different thing to prostitution. To be married and to enter that sacred contract, it's a very different... If you say, well, you don't just marry for the money, but it is a factor. That's a factor in arranging marriages traditionally, and you have to see if the man can support the family, and if he can support the family well so that the wife can live comfortably, should be more happy with that. That's a general material tendency. And it's probably among our devotees also, unless they're very highly advanced spiritualists, which some of them may be. Clearly, to introduce into our movement polygamy would cause untold problems. Maybe, but we're in general, yeah, Prabhupada, he didn't encourage it within our movement because he saw it might cause so many problems. But in general, if we examine the whole question, Prabhupada's last words on this, in general, he's in favor of that, but it may not be the time to introduce it. But at least we can start talking about it and understanding it. There may be a time when we are ready to introduce that. And that would help those women who are coming to our movement who don't get husbands. And then she goes on to the point that there's the shortage of qualified men. So women are not supposed to be independent. They're supposed to be married. Yeah, it's a vicious cycle. Because what happens, they promote that women should be big, and I'm talking about the secular society in which, especially in the West, in which people are raised, they promote women should be independent and do what they like, and they shouldn't be submissive to their husband, and so on and so on. And then the men don't want to be responsible for such women. And so, as Prabhupada often quoted, he was Marshall's economic theory, that a man will work hard if he has a wife, if he's responsible for the wife and child. But the man comes home and the first thing, the wife screams and yells at him. And again, I'm not saying that this lady who's writing the, I'm not saying about her. I know she doesn't do that. She's a very good wife and a very good devotee. But I'm saying in general, it's a vicious cycle. The women don't want to take the womanly role, and then the husband doesn't want to protect them, and then he has no motivation to work hard. He can get money from the government. The woman can get money from the government. And it's a social disaster. You have so many young men in the Western world now who they don't want to marry because they think it's such a bad deal. Why should you marry? Why should you have any relationship with women? Because the laws are set up in such a way that that it always favors the female. And that's there in India too. So people, increasingly men don't want to marry because it's too much of a liability for them, legally. And also a man has that ego, as Prabhupada writes. Again, it may not be a devotee, but it may be also, because it's not that we all become pure devotees as soon as we join the movement. So, it's a vicious cycle. The men, they're not as men should be because the women aren't as the women should be, and it's the whole thing has been promoted by demons and the whole society is a complete mess. But we have to start taking steps to rectify that. So then she writes, why not write a book targeted at men, their qualities, and how they can uplift themselves spiritually in order to lead the way in this movement? Very good idea. But I did write within this book, on page 159, proponents of traditional gender roles are often charged with particularly stressing the duties of women over those of men. However, the reason for particularly emphasizing women's duties is that a major disparity in modern society is that of women trying to be like men, not vice versa. So that's one point to consider. And the book actually has three subtopics on the duties of men, three sections, beginning from page 157. The first section is called Hopeless Women Become Feminists, Men Should Become First Class, Some Misconceptions of Men, and Duties of Married Men. So that covers several pages. We did take birth in the West, and Srila Prabhupada understood that fact. He understood that as educated, bright women, we would find it difficult to conform to traditional Vedic concepts. Therefore, he so mercifully allowed us to dovetail our nature in Krishna's service. I also cannot understand why the back of the book has pictures of women who look Indian and others born in traditionalist communities, and then the Western women are all photographed in men-like careers. In man, well, actually, it shows Indian women. There are Indian and non-Indian women in both sections, so that was a misunderstanding on her point. This does not reflect the true picture of most women in this country anyway. 99% of women are employed in the care industry. I don't know where she's getting the facts from. There's whatever country, there's no 99% that women are in. I guess she means by that healthcare. But are there not women policemen, women in business, women in secretaries, women as what do they call it, in the shops, the tellers, cashiers? She's very convinced of herself, but she's definitely got some, you know, 99%. Sorry, it's just wrong. There are careers such as nursing in the childcare, industry, for example. There are jobs in Kali Yuga which cannot be filled by a man. For example, when a child has been molested or raped, a female policewoman interviews alongside a male witness to give the child self-assurance. Women are also employed more as counselors for this reason also. Yeah, women is better for children. Agreed. Recently in China, after the earthquake, one policewoman hit the headlines. She is now known in China. She is now known as China's mother. She was called to the scene of devastation, a building completely destroyed, and there were many crying babies, and having her own six-month-old son, she could understand their suffering, so she breastfed 9 babies and is still feeding 2. Did her position and her uniform make her any less of a mother? No, a mother is always a mother, and many of the professions filled by women involve mothering, nursing, listening to children in emergency situations, doctors, lawyers. Lawyers is a... I think she's got a misconception of what lawyers are. It's a very tough profession. Look at Hillary Clinton. She's from a lawyer's background, and she's hawkish. She was bombing Libya and so on. And social workers who are in charge of children taken from abusive homes and responsible of placing them into loving homes. Why are they not represented in your book or on the back cover? Not one photo of a nurse or a childcare worker. Okay, all right. I'll give you a point on that. It's like, you know, really, it's got to be something wrong with that. She says a mother is always a mother. What about those millions of abortions going on all over the world? For instance, this is an idealized view of women, that they're all very saintly and motherly. Hence my judgment that it's unbalanced. Well, sorry, but it seems that in some ways you're unbalanced. So what does balance mean? It's like calling someone an extremist. My final argument is Mother Falini's essay about female initiating gurus. In Prabhupada's movement, firstly, she is accepting the role of guru herself by writing against the proposal. Okay, let's accept her proposal, no female gurus. But then if we accept her authority, then are we not accepting her at least as an instructing guru, which in other parts of your books is not recommended? You say clearly Prabhupada wanted men to lead the way, so here again is a contradiction. If I put women to show that if I don't have women, then it'll just say, see, it's just men. They're just trying to suppress the women. And if you put women, you say, why are you putting women? You see, they're not supposed to, you're supposed to just shut up and keep quiet. So we do it, damned if you do, damned if you don't. Elderly women would teach younger women, yeah, traditionally. That's the culture. So she sees a contradiction in this. By the way, I'm not wholly against that there should be female Diksha Gurus. But I'm just saying that at the present time, it's not the need of the hour. That it's with the present gender parity, feminist ethos in our movement, it would be again a sign showing that, yeah, everything you can do, I can do better. There have been initiating gurus within the Gaudiya tradition, female. But they were in, the culture was already established. Our first need is to establish this culture. Prabhupada spoke so much about establishing that culture. Why don't we talk about that? Why? How much did Prabhupada talk about female initiating gurus? Why do we talk so much about one thing that Prabhupada didn't stress? And the thing that he did stress, we don't want to talk about that at all. So I'm not against it. But at the present time, it's just not the need of the hour. So it would send a wrong message. Prabhupada, in about 1968, I believe, he wrote a letter saying that maybe by 1975, all my disciples, boys and girls, they'll all become initiating gurus. By 1975, he didn't institute it. When he was asked if women can be initiating gurus, Prabhupada said yes, but in very rare cases. And he gave the example of Janava Devi, the wife of Lord Nityananda. So at one point it seems, yeah, Prabhupada, he had the idea to engage men and women equally, but he did change that. That requires a paper to show all that in some detail. And then there's something also she quotes that Srila Prabhupada gave Brahmin initiation to the devotees going to England, just before they went to England, in Toronto. This must have been 1969 or late 1968, something like that. So there was Shamasundra and his wife Malati, Mukunda and his wife Janaki, and Guru Das and his wife Yamuna. So Yamuna said, this is written in Rancho's book. She's quoted this lady who wrote me this letter, quoted this from Rancho Prabhu's book, a very nice book. It's called When the Sun Shines. It's about Srila Prabhupada and his followers in England, in Britain. And it's based on a quote from Prabhupada said that England is very nice when the sun shines, which it doesn't do very much. He also said London is hell when one of his disciples, Krishna Avesha, she asked Prabhupada, Prabhupada is lecturing in London. Prabhupada, does Krishna speak the Bhagavad? Is the Bhagavad Gita spoken in hell? Strange question. Prabhupada replied that, I'm speaking Bhagavad Gita. I'm in London. Is it not? Is it not hell? So anyway, it's a very nice book. So he quotes that he writes about the devotees coming to England, and he said that Prabhupada placed threads on the shoulders of the males, and he gave threads to the females in their hands. So I wrote to Rancho Prabhu. He's my old friend from way back, one of those great devotees with so much to offer. I've written many books. And he said, I interviewed Yamuna, and this is what she told me. And she asked me to destroy all the tapes and everything. And she didn't write it in her book. He wrote that because I guess she didn't want to be controversial. Then I looked it up in Guru Das Prabhu's book. He also gave some memory. And he wrote the same thing. So Prabhupada did it at one. So she's citing this as a case that Prabhupada did give threads to women, because Mother Falini gives the argument that the woman to give initiation has to give the Brahmin thread, and you have to place it on the man's body. She can't do that if she's a woman. But because women don't have a thread, they can't give a thread. And so this lady disciple of mine says that, well, Prabhupada did it one time. Okay, it appears he gave in the hand one time. But that doesn't change the rule, the whole tradition. Taking an exception and making it as a rule, it's a very poor interpretive tools. I'm just saying this as these are standard methods of interpretation. I have studied the subject in some depth, having been on the Hermeneutics and Epistemology Committee of the GBC, which was formed to discuss how do we understand Prabhupada's teachings, because There are different ways of interpreting. Can we? And we discussed for several years, quite politely. It did get a bit heated at some point. It was very interesting discussions. We didn't come to any final agreement. So it's not so easy. But anyway, anyone, either according to Vedic tradition, which is the Mimamsa, is the Vedic tradition of Shastric interpretation, nor according to Western tradition of epistemology and hermeneutics. If you don't know the words, you can look them up. They're important words if we're going to discuss such matters. You can't take one exception and make it the rule, notwithstanding the English saying that the exception proves the rule. Then she goes on, you can try and guide you without a thread. The thread, although given in India only to men, is also because in India initiation, both first and second, was traditionally only given to men. Actually, in India there's no conception of first and second initiation. That does not take away from the fact that a Brahmin is still a Brahmin, and Prabhupada did not see his lady disciples such. Why did he allow them to worship temple deities? In fact, it was Yamuna who dressed deities for installations. A lot of misunderstanding about this, on what it means to be a Brahmin within our society today. As Prabhupada said in that first initiation he gave to women, actually they don't need, if their husband's a Brahmin, they automatically gain that status. Women are also allowed to worship deities according to the Hari Bhakti Vilas, although generally not in temples. So if you lose your japa, I guess by that, she means japa mala. You don't lose your initiation as long as you follow. The mala is material, so is the concept of not having a thread, even if we believe Prabhupada never gave them, which clearly is not the case here. It doesn't make you unqualified to hand one to the opposite sex. The qualification is not material, it's spiritual. And the qualification of being guru is just to repeat clearly what our previous acharya said. In our case, Srila Prabhupada has stated. But you also, you're not just simply quoting Prabhupada, you have so much interpretation. So he said, you just state what Prabhupada said, but she has all this long explanation of how Prabhupada gave the thread once, and so this, and that. So it's a bit strained. Yeah, I'm quoting from that first initiation. This is Jadurani, her memories. Is it Jadurani or Govindasi? No, it is Jadurani. Most of his lecture that night was about how all women should be married. And I've already said. Prabhupada pointed to a painting that I had done as Jadurani, which was on the wall to his left, of Sita, Ram, Hanuman, and Lakshman. And he said, you see, Ram has a thread, but Sita doesn't. Still we say Sita, Ram. She is the energy. She is first. Sita, Ram. We know so much about Krishna, and we hardly know anything about Radharani, but still we say Radha, Krishna. Prabhupada was telling us that you're not going to get a thread, but it doesn't matter. Don't become implicated. Just remain pure and get yourselves married. That was the thrust of his lecture. Then she goes on about Sarasvati. Sarasvati was still a child. Prabhupada liked that she was preaching. He didn't say to she should cook so and never to open her mouth as she has a female body. This is a bit too much, actually, because I never said that women should not open her mouth. So too, Prabhupada told devotees, do not simply say, Swamiji says, don't follow me blindly. So just before, she wrote that you just have to repeat clearly what Prabhupada stated. And then she said, don't follow blindly. So what am I to do if I'm to follow you? But later, Prabhupada did give that direction, that, as I've stated before, in the early days, especially he didn't, but later on he stated this should be the direction. Oh, almost 3 hours. So I'm upset at the moment, and I bring all these matters to your attention, and I hope and pray that you'll take this letter as it is written, not as a personal criticism to you or to a traditional approach to Krishna consciousness, but as a very concerned, bewildered, loving daughter who threw herself at your feet more than 20 years ago and prays by your mercy to always remain there, understanding you not as a law unto yourself, but as a transparent medium to the mercy of Srila Prabhupada and Krishna consciousness, as only he could have given it. So it is definitely a spiritual crisis for her that she has much dedication and respect and affection for me for over all these years. I encouraged her in the beginning to join the temple in the West, because if they don't join the temple, it's very difficult for them to get any training. She did many, many years of very good service in various temples, distributing books, doing all kinds of services. She is a very good mother, very good wife, very good devotee, but she perceives that I'm not transparently representing Prabhupada, and I'm blocking his mercy by giving these ideas. Whereas others, they think, other female disciples of mine think that, oh, my life became so much better when I understood these principles. As I say, she's a very good devotee. She's very, very dedicated. But I don't think everyone can do what she does. She does all her motherly duties and wife duties. She also goes on book distribution in the daytime. She's very careful about how she does it. And I also, I do encourage women devotees who have that inclination. Yes, I don't discourage them. Yeah, you can go for book distribution, but don't neglect your family duties. So, although I'm pointing this direction, but it's not that I'm stereotyped that everyone has to be in such a way. And at least it should be a point of discussion in our movement. What is the direction? Okay, we may not be, as Prabhupada says, you can't change a society's social customs overnight. But we want to change it. Prabhupada spoke about a cultural revolution. He said the West, nasty Western culture. He wanted to introduce the Vedic culture, which is better for spiritual advancement. It is hierarchical. It makes a distinction, higher, lower, different roles. It's going to be very difficult to people who are brought up in their culture. They're absolutely against this. They think that everyone's equal in all respects. And then in another letter she wrote how women and children have been very badly mistreated in our movement. That's true, not all of them, but many of them have been, and many men have also been mistreated. We did go through a very bad period. And so they may be very upset by seeing this cover of the book. It may be, but one thing is, it has called attention to the book. So at the risk of making offense, I want to bring these issues out. These are very important issues, which are not getting the kind of discussion that they deserve. I also feel very upset at the way the movement has been taken on a completely different course, with this, first of all, abandoning Varnashram, and in so many ways, there are so many compromises. I'm very much affected by this, as probably all of you know, that I feel like a stranger in the movement that I gave, well, I was saved by. I can't say I gave my life to. Well, I did in one sense, but I was saved by this movement. Some may be feminists, but even a feminist is still in a woman's body, and so should be treated with respect, as was the teaching of Narad Muni when he saved Prahlad's mother. Interestingly, before she wrote this to me, I wrote to someone else who had been quite in quite a pointed way, attacking the position and even the persons of some of the women in our movement. So I wrote to him, "However misguided and misguiding some of the ladies might be, it would be well for us to remember that Rama still respected Kaikeyi even after her ill treatment of him. Of course, Rama also killed some female demons. But we are not dealing with demons, but with persons who are dear to Srila Prabhupada. I am not at all advocating that we decrease our ideological struggle, but that we maintain an attitude something like that of Arjuna, who fully honored Bhishma and Drona, even as he fully strived to kill them, ultimately by expediency in both cases, by tricks, you could say. It is always a risk to criticize Vaishnavas. Sometimes, for the sake of attempted rectification, it might be necessary, but we have to be careful." So, my apologies. Some offense may be there. I don't deny it, but my aim is not to be offensive, but to point out that you shouldn't be offended by this. If you're offended by this, then there's something wrong with that. So, then I to this lady disciple, I said, "Well, you should listen. There's 150 lectures, come with the book also. Listen to them, maybe you'll get a better understanding." And so she wrote back to me, "So are you saying that the book cannot be understood if you don't listen to the disc then? So if anyone asks me which so far nobody has, will I tell them that? You can't understand the book unless you listen to the lectures." Well, many have understood without listening to the lectures, but it gets a bit much. It gets a bit much. It's getting to be... she thinks I'm offensive, but she's bordering there herself on the same thing. But I'm not offended, because if you take offense easily, then don't try to be a guru or a leader or any such thing. Which is another reason why, right, women shouldn't take a leading role, because if you take a leading role, then you're gonna be disrespected. That's especially true in the modern age. So you just have to get used to that. Here's a letter from another of my female disciples. So yeah, you can get... I'm not saying that... In her case, I'm saying you better listen to all of this, because then, you know, by hearing and in detail, you might gradually get the idea. But others get it just by... Even without reading the book, many have understood the points. And just by... So it's not for every... Anyway, people are not going to listen. Mostly they're not going to listen unless they're inclined to. Anyway, I held that meeting in Vrindavan to discuss this book outside the temple present premises. And I asked those who were objecting, "Please come, give your objections." None of them came. It was only people coming who were already on our side, if you want to put it that way. So it was just a rehash of the same points. And there was some... devotee said, "Well, this is Vrindavan, this is the place of Radharani and Krishna's Leela." I said, "Yeah, it's also the place where Prabhupada spoke about Varnashram." So I said, you speak about those things. And we'll speak about the things that people need to hear now, and then when they get to that level, we'll send them to you. So this is from a female disciple of myself, again. "In your lectures on these topics, you elaborate and explain Shastric points and Srila Prabhupada's purports." By the way, you may say, I shouldn't talk about these things at all, but I think I should do, even though it may not be the role, a traditional role of a sannyasi, but someone has to explain these things. It's required, because there are so many misunderstandings. I don't personally involve very closely with lady devotees. That should be looked after by the Grihastha men, as I state in this book. But there are many misconceptions. Prabhupada wrote that I personally arranged marriages, although that in the tradition of sannyas, no one did that. But then Prabhupada stopped after some time doing so, when his own disciples were qualified to do that. So in your lectures on these topics, you elaborate and explain Shastric points in Srila Prabhupada's purport. It's almost over, by the way. It's a long lecture. For example, why Shastra says that women should not be independent, or why... So I elaborate and explain Shastric points in Srila Prabhupada's purport. So that's what a disciple is supposed to do. You're supposed to elaborate on points that, particularly those points which are misunderstood or those misconceptions which are prominent in human society. For instance, Srila Prabhupada spoke a lot about the cheating of scientists, which previous acharyas hadn't done. It was an issue in modern society which he felt necessary to address. He felt it necessary to address misconceptions about women's roles because it was something that he came, something that he was required to discuss. So also, I discuss things which require to be discussed so people can be free of misconceptions, although some people say, I have misconceptions, so everyone has to choose for themselves who they're going to follow. For example, why Shastra says that women should not be independent, or why women are considered less intelligent, why women should preach to women, why Krishna himself says that polygamy is good and how to do it, why Srila Prabhupada didn't tell some of these things to his female disciples immediately, but through his classes, conversations, and books. I also didn't know much about it, but because I gave myself some time to listen from my husband and from Your Holiness, I now have a totally different understanding about all these topics. So it seems that some just, they don't want to get educated on this same thing. It's a big picture. You are gradually introducing the concept of Daiva Varnashram Dharma, and if we listen to it and take note, we can get an idea what society is more suitable for spiritual life and Krishna consciousness, and in what position women and children are much happier and peaceful. And you also inspire your female disciples to preach, teach, go into book distribution, etc. Many do not get education on Varnashram Dharma or Sri Dharma, or if one does not agree, then it is something else. It is just unwillingness to accept Shastric injunctions and having more faith in modern society's concept of women, children, and family in terms of social life. As Srila Prabhupada wrote, he mentioned the puffed up womanly concept, the puffed up concept of womanly life. When we came to Krishna consciousness, we stopped eating meat and started to follow the four regulations. In the same way, when we grow in Krishna consciousness, we naturally want to change other things. Actually, we're expected to do that, accepting Krishna's Vedic culture and try to implement it as much as possible in our circumstances. Instead of denying it all the time as impossible or exploited because it is the opposite of modern society's ideology. So it seems that many of the Western Matajis are completely unwilling to change that side of them when they join this movement. They agree with the four regulations, but that's it. The rest is just all equal with men, and they cover their ears to hear, and they have a very strong dislike towards Vedic culture because they think it is Indian and not from Golok, Vrindavan, and Vaikuntha. Regarding the propagator of, or those who are propagating this Krishna West idea, they say that it's not, it's this Vedic, it's all Indian. In other words, maybe we should remove all that from Prabhupada's books because it's all Indian. I would not be surprised if they soon say they need a new god because Krishna is also Indian. But, she's right, the influence of this Krishna West, and not reading and hearing from Prabhupada on these topics, and which you also mention in your lectures, they start to believe that all the standards we follow are Indian, including the position of women and children, and they say, I don't want to be Indian. He's actually I'm sure Prabhupada would be very upset at this, because he said, oh, that's all Indian. Look at India. You see, they have rapes and caste system. Prabhupada would be very, very upset at this. This misrepresentation. So, I may not have answered all the points that she made, but it's already, I've been speaking for over 3 hours, and it took me almost that much time to prepare all this. It's a very big topic. So it may be that I expect that this disciple of mine will continue to disagree with me on this. She's a strong-minded lady, and she's strong in her Krishna consciousness. What can I do? I can't control the mind. The duty of a guru is to give instruction, and the disciple has to accept or not accept. Like I've been speaking on these things for many years. It's nothing new. So, what to do about all this? It's unfortunate. She might say, "Yes, I'll just follow," but everyone has their own mind. But we should try to understand what is the message. Well, she's also saying the same thing, that I don't understand what Prabhupada actually wanted to say. And I'm saying she doesn't. And it's not just me, and there's a whole divide in our movement. So where is this going to go? Anyway, at least it's going somewhere. If this book wasn't published, then we'd just be drifting on. Anyway, we're just drifting off more and more to compromising with secular society in so many ways. So I hope at least there may be some discussion. Probably there'll be some kind of rift or split or whatever, because that's the history of religious movements over various issues. I've suggested several times that we should consider, to GBC members, I've suggested we should consider having orders like the Catholic Church has, to accommodate different kinds of approaches. So thanks to Braj Bihari Prabhu, that there's some discussion of that is going on in the... I asked different GBC members, but they just didn't take it seriously. But he's taken it seriously. Thank you to him for that. So, Hare Krishna. I hope no one has any questions. Well, there may be thousands of questions, but I think we all had enough for now. Is it? Anyone? Questions? Questions, comments, protests? No rotten tomatoes, please. Yeah, okay.
Teachers have to relate to the society.
Teachers and preachers have to relate to the society. Otherwise you can't preach.
My experience was when I was exposed to Srila Prabhupada's books, I spoke to my grandfather regarding this particular issue. And he exposed it to me that even though he went to a government school, every day they were reciting poems on Brahmacharya. And they were taught actually by the teacher who was the importance of Brahmacharya.
Mm.
But then he had four sons and he couldn't share it with them because of the influence of the society that then it was taking. And so what I'm trying to make a point that many people might be knowing the truth, but to be so-called politically correct or to relate to the masses, they keep quiet. This has been a trend and nobody has touched this particular issue together. If you are not a preacher, if you just are practicing pure spiritual life, then you cannot relate to the spiritual, then you cannot relate to this material world at all. The saying goes, the truth will make you lonely, or Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur has been brought out sometimes. He says that this material world is not fit for any gentleman to live. Then you are alone, you are lonely, and then you cannot relate to anybody. So maybe this being the point, many people who even realize this, they keep quiet. So what extent of diplomacy is practiced?
It's too general a question. That you have to see how others are doing. It's impossible to answer clearly, because the question itself is not what extent. What do you mean, 20%, 30%? What do you mean by diplomacy, and to what extent? Obviously, a preacher has to make some connection with those he's preaching to. Otherwise, there has to be some level of acceptance between the two. That you can study yourself. You see the different preachers, how Prabhupada preached and how different devotees preached. It's not stereotyped. Even Prabhupada, some situations he'd act in one way, and people asked him a question, he'd react in another way with someone else in another situation. Generally, presenting the truth. That's the point. Speaking strongly in Srila Prabhupada's, as you can see that book. Although Prabhupada also sometimes said, in the beginning you just give them kirtan and prasadam. Later you give them teaching. He also said that sometimes. Okay, Hare Krishna. Thank you for your patience.